last number is 4.
Is that right?
That's it.
Hey, Ray. It's Larry.
Good morning. Or afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yeah.
Hey, the good news is I finally had my hip surgery, and the hip surgery was just absolutely phenomenally good.
Very good. Yeah. Glad to hear that.
Fantastic.
And you get to come home in about 2 weeks or so, you hope?
I don't know. I could go to do 3 or 4 weeks of physical therapy.
Yeah.
But the hip surgery was just great. We saw the doctor a week ago, and he was happy. He said, I don't want to see you for another 6 months.
Well, that's great. We're glad to hear that.
Is that because your hip's doing good, or because you were such pain? Which was it?
Now I wind up getting a urinary tract infection, and that's why I'm in the Shands Hospital right now.
Oh, are you? Oh, okay. Okay, well, good luck with that.
Well, it seems to be going okay. It's just have to figure out what's causing it and get that cured, and then send me back to ears to continue with my therapy there.
Okay.
All right.
We're ready to go.
Good.
Okay.
All right. Time is now 1:14 p.m. Bring this meeting of the Ocala Police Officers Retirement Board of Trustees meeting to order. My name is Michael Summer. I'm the plan set for the board secretary. Matt's statement before chairman cannot be here for purposes of the recording. We'll go around and introduce ourselves.
Doug Shively, board member.
Dave Griffin.
Larry Cole, investment consultant.
Lee Diener, board attorney.
Dale Adams, plan administrator.
Diane Riker, finance director. Chief financial officer. Alicia
Cather,
Sadie Smith.
All right, first item on the agenda, confirm results from the recent election process.
In June, I posted a notice and sent a notice out regarding Mike's position on the board, and we received 2 nominations, one for Mike, one also for Robin Ford. And Robin declined her nomination, and there were no other nominations for the position. And as there was only one nominee who accepted his nomination, then Mike would be elected. And I'm not sure what the procedure would be for casting a single ballot on his behalf.
He's in by acclamation.
He's in by acclamation.
The board just needs to affirm that to certify that by motion.
Okay, so it's the appropriate motion to move to accept Mike Summer as the board member? Is that?
Certify the election results.
Okay. I move that this board certify the election results of Mike Summer is continues as a board member.
I'll second that.
Discussion?
We haven't got any better choices left.
There's your description.
Wow. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Dan, that reminds me of what somebody on the board said the other day in a situation similar to this. The administrator said, he's in by default. I said, no, acclamation sounds a lot better.
Also related to that was Dane's position for the board. That was approved by City Council last Tuesday, I believe.
Yes.
And so Dane is serving another new term for 2 years on the board. Did you have to go through an interview for that?
Okay. Interview with Diane and Matt Brown.
Okay. So Dane's appointment was effective last week. And that takes us to the next item.
Okay. Select 5th member of the Board of Trustees. And that is
Yeah. Yeah, and that is actually done by the other 4 members of the board. Matt is not here today, but the other members select the 5th member, and then that's submitted to council. Council is required by ordinance to approve that as a ministerial duty. And if Doug is willing to serve again, the board decides they want to appoint him as the fifth member.
I'm willing, the board satisfied with my performance, I would like to do another term.
I move that this board elect Doug as the fifth member.
I can't second that.
You can second it.
I can second that?
Yeah.
Okay. Second. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. And what we'll do is I'll prepare a letter for the chairman's second signature to City Council and request that they appoint him as a ministerial duty as the fifth member of the board.
I want to say that we table the next item, selecting the chairman and secretary until Matt's here. I'm not comfortable making that decision without his input.
Is that okay with everybody?
Yes.
Thank you.
Review minutes of prior meeting. Has everybody gotten those? Craig, did you get those?
Craig, did you see the minutes of the last meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
And I got a copy of the
Burgess Chambers report.
Burgess Chambers report, okay. Yes, I did.
Okay.
I move we accept the minutes as written.
And second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes.
And for the record, that's the May 13th minute.
All right, next thing is apparently we have two people entering and drop.
And Ray, I apologize, I did not send these to you. This is the calculations for two members who entered the drop as of May 1st. First one is Eric Reese. He elected into the drop as of May 1st after 22 and 3/4 years of accredited service. And he elected to take a 20% lump sum in the amount of $132,257.25 and a 10-year guaranteed payment in the amount of $4,056.83.
I move we approve Eric Reese.
Second. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Dave made the motion. And the second one is Rocky Smith, who also elected to enter the drop at the same time on May 1st after 23 and a half years of accredited service. And the way he was able to do that is his age, current age, he just turned 50. But the way he was able to do that with 23 and a half years of service is cross-crediting service. He had a little over a year and a half credited service in the general plan. And those two combined gave him the required 25 years of service so he could enter the drop. He did elect to enter the drop with a 20% lump sum in the amount of $195,539.07 and a 10-year guarantee on his pension of $5,904.65 per month.
sorry, which option do you think?
Pardon me? I didn't circle that amount, but it's the second line down. It says for retired lifetime, 120 payments here.
Right.
It's down there.
Yeah.
I move we approve Rodney Smith for the drop.
I'll second that.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. I guess we have an investment in Westwood?
They're out in the lobby. Just as a real quick, kind of...
Okay.
As a reminder, update, whatever, I've asked Westwood to just give about a five-minute update on their large cap value product. The numbers were good for the quarter, they're improving. I was out there doing a site visit in November, or February. I'll go through that when I do my report, but I just told them...
Westwood first.
Westwood first, yes, sorry. And so I asked them that maybe just a 5 minutes, and then go ahead and we'll do the MLP presentation from them. I told them to keep it to about 15, 20 minutes. And remember in the MLPs, what I introduced them to you, I think that the last meeting, or a couple meetings, went into a little detail, the last meeting, kind of a MLP 101. So they're going to be kind of educational and also touting their firm and their product, but educational too. So ask questions about it. If anything comes up, you understand. And we're talking initially maybe about 5% total in the into that. $2.5 million.
Thank you.
Yeah, right.
Thank you, guys. Very happy to unburden myself at all things here, but
that is one of the most fun things about our business.
Yeah, it looks around.
Be thankful for the technology. We don't do that anymore.
But is this way?
But then you get in meetings where it's so awkward.
I won't take tablets. A lot of people don't know how to use it. Much stick.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to keep them.
You keep a book, though.
Pretty well.
All right, Kim, Todd, introduce yourselves.
Thank you.
And the floor, please, is yours. We have one trustee participating by phone.
Okay.
Ray Dunleavy. And Ray, you won't have these books, I guess, in front of you.
No.
Sorry about that. We'll try to keep that in mind as we're discussing it, but and maybe I can get you a copy. Do you have the BCA book, though, don't you?
Yeah,
okay. Well, we'll do our best here to follow along, but some of this was covered. Well, you missed the last meeting, too, I guess, but it was covered in an introduction last meeting to Master Limited Partnerships, kind of the 101 version that I did, and just to introduce the publicly traded MLPs to the board. I'm bringing two managers in today to get more specifics and to present their specific product and then make a decision maybe at the end of the meeting whether we're going to commit any assets to it.
Do you want me to wait?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah,
okay,
I'm sorry.
There's two different books there.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So I guess I'll get started. Again, my name is Ken Nostro. I'm with Westwood's Institutional Sales and Client Service Department. I'm in my sixth year at Westwood now, and I'm based up in New York. I've been part of the client service team along with Kim, who you work with for Large Cap. With me here is Todd Williams. Todd is the senior portfolio member of our MLP team. He's going to be at Westwood 11 years in November, and he's going to spend a good portion of our time together talking about our MLP strategy and what makes it different. But Larry asked me real quick that the first book I handed out there...
Excuse me, Ken. Sure. Just before you start, sorry to interrupt, but just to be sure we're all on the same page, I noted both of your books on the title page of Institutional Use Only Not for Public Distribution. You know this is public record now, and anybody requests it.
Yes.
You require
yep.
to.
No, that's fine. It's just that we're not, they put that there, as you may know, so that we don't talk to people who may not be in a position to have a good understanding of what we're trying to accomplish here. So that's what
I know.
Yeah,
that's
what I understand. Thank you for pointing that out. That's you guys are welcome to disseminate it any way you'd like. So again, the two books here, one is the thicker book is the MLP book, which we'll spend a lot of time on. But Larry asked me real quick just to give the 5 minutes update on the Large Cap portfolio with us. So that would be the dinner book, and I'm just going to go on pages 7 and 8 here real quick to give you an update on Westwood. Kind of looks like this. You can just see these pages here. Okay.
Yeah. 6 and 7.
Yeah, 6, 7, and then I'm going to go on to 8 for just a second. So Marsh Cat's been doing well for us. You can see the performance there on page 7. Westwood has been real happy to be able to keep up with the large cap index through June. The first quarter we did underperform a little due to a lot of risk taking in the marketplace, but in the second quarter we feel investors started to recognize the risk inherent in the market and related to a fundamentally driven process that focuses on high quality companies like Westwood. So we did much better in the second quarter there. But what we're really most pleased about is through June, 8 out of 9 times when the market was down more than 1%, we did not participate in that. And that's something that we're really known for, capturing that less on the downside. And that's a big improvement from last year where, you know, just under 50% of the time we were down over 1% with the market. So we're really trying to focus more on making sure that we're capturing less on the downside. And we're happy to say that we've done that. So you can see the performance numbers there on page 7, just real quickly on page 8 in terms of what has helped and hurt. You can see this is the attribution that the sector weights are on the left-hand side. I'm sure Kim shared this page with you guys before. The total is return in that sector, and then the right-hand column shows you the contribution, really just multiplying the return by the weight. You can see that energy, financial services, and producer durables had the biggest positive impact in the portfolio. You know, for energy, Occidental Petroleum had a real good quarter with their earnings and really carried that sector for us. In producer durables, Boeing, they thought they had resolved the battery issue, so the stock went up with them and took the rest of producer durables with them. And then in finance, a couple of things to play on the insurance side. AIG and Hartford had good earnings, and Hartford, in addition to that, talked about giving more cash back to shareholders. And then Wells Fargo and finance also did well. You know, with increased interest rates, that's going to be more revenue for them, as well as the rebound in the housing market has helped them. So those are the positives in the quarter. And on the negative side, you can see healthcare and technology really big decrements. Technology was a little mixed, with Microsoft actually having better than expected PC sales, so they were up. But then on the negative side, Oracle and Accenture missed their earnings due to a slowdown in Europe and Asia. Then in healthcare, Covidien, lower utilization rates, and then fears that their split of their pharma business may be detrimental. But we're watching them closely, and currently we're still happy with them. The next page, the last thing I'll say in the 5 minutes here is, you know, you can see the sales there on the right-hand side on page 9. There's, for the gentleman on the phone there, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 sales. We're happy to say that 8 of them occurred because of hitting the price target or being real close to the price target. So those are obviously good things, good reasons to sell. The one that did not hit the price target and we actually changed our mind was Teva Pharmaceutical. We actually replaced them for a better risk-reward profile in the portfolio. Their generic business wasn't keeping up as we had hoped for, so we decided to get out and get into something better. So that's really a quick update on the large cap portfolio. We're really happy with the way it's positioned currently. The firm, just a quick update on Westwood, you know, we remain in strong financial shape. You know, we're up to about $15.8 billion in assets under management. We're adding to our investment team. We just hired a percent in Handar, I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, as a new healthcare analyst for the large cap portfolio. So we're real happy with large cap, and I'd be happy to take any questions you have on that before I turn it over to Todd. Well, again, thank you so much for the large cap business, and we're happy and excited to talk to you about the MLP strategy. So if you switch to the thicker book now, a couple of slides just going over real quick. You see Todd in my bio there on that first page. The full MLP portfolio team bios are at the back of the book. But if you go to, you know, pages 5 and 6, I just want to point out what we're doing here in Florida. We're real proud to work with all these public funds on page 5. We're actually hoping to add more, and actually have some verbal commitments to add more to the MLP strategy in Florida. Hopefully going to get those contracts done and put them within the next couple of months. And then the next page, just want to show you where we're actually, which public funds in the country are using our MLP strategy. And that is a list that is growing in part because we've come out with this new commingled vehicle, which acts in a way as a K-1 blocker for the strategy. And it's been really warmly received by the institutional marketplace. So with that, I know we don't have much time, but I'm going to turn over to Todd on page 9 to just talk real briefly about the MLP investment case. As Larry said, you guys got that on your list in terms of why invest in MLPs. Maybe just a minute or two, especially for those who missed the meeting last time, and then we'll have Todd talk about what makes our strategy different.
All right. I'm going to start off on page 9 here, and feel free to jump in with questions as we go along, or if you feel comfortable at the end. Either way, I'm good. So on 9 is really just to provide you an overview of the MLP landscape, really what kind of assets can be put into an MLP, and really, you know, what ultimately are you investing in when you're investing in these MLPs. So. For the large part, they're energy oriented, and the assets that go into these MLPs are the things that handle or process or transport energy, you know, be it oil, gas, or you know, gasoline, or coal, or whatever it may be, around this country, from where it's produced to where it's ultimately used. So you can think about, you know, long haul pipelines, you can think about, you know, short pipelines, you can think about storage assets, distribution type assets, things like that. So it's a hard asset natured business, and predominantly the bulk of the landscape, if you will, is in this midstream area that I'm really talking about, and that's the bulk of what our portfolio is in as well. But you can have MLPs that, you know, own natural resources, and it also could be a shipping or refining type company.
Ray, for your benefit, you can't see that, but the midstream section of this MLP that he's referring to has to do with pipelines and the gathering and the processing, and kind of the, I guess you said storage of the gas or oil.
So on 10, just to talk about, you know, why MLPs are attractive right now and what the investment case is. So it's really about investing in all of the energy infrastructure that's needed to keep pace with the growing energy production in this country. We're having literally a renaissance of crude oil production in this country, as well as natural gas. And it's coming from a lot of new areas in this country, and it's also coming from some old areas that have been revitalized. And so it's requiring a lot of additional infrastructure to take it from where it's being produced to where it's ultimately being used. And so that's, you know, that's the fundamental backdrop of what's occurring right now. But the other things that are important to know about MLPs is that, you know, predominantly the cash flows of these companies are very stable, and a lot of the things that they do are fee-based in nature. So they don't take a lot of commodity price risk, if you will. Another thing would just be they have a natural inflation hedge that could be, you know, very beneficial to your fund, and since they are hard assets. So replacement costs would inherently rise if interest rates rise. And also a lot of these companies have inflation protection built into the fees that they charge their customers. So, you know, if inflation rises, the fees are going to rise, so that protects the return that, that you could potentially get over time. Another thing is it's a yield-oriented asset class. So the yield right now is around 6% on these companies. But the important thing is that they're growing their dividends around 7 or 8% for the next several years. So you get a very compelling total return proposition these days of around, you know, 13, 14%. I think that that's very attractive. There's some other things about the asset class. It's historically had a low correlation to a lot of other asset classes, which also, you know, clearly from a diversification benefit, would be a positive. On 11, gives you a historical snapshot of what the returns have been for the last 10 and a half years. And we went back 10 and a half years because that's what we started back in 2003. So you can see on a risk-adjusted basis, in terms of the standard deviation or the volatility of these companies, or of the asset class returns over time.
you know, married to the actual return. It's been extremely compelling versus all of these other asset classes, and basically has significantly outperformed them all. And we've actually done a little bit better than that. As you can see, we're a little bit higher and to the left of our index, which is that red Alerian and MLP index. Another thing to think about this asset class is, even though it's been around essentially since the 80s and more formally since, you know, the 90s, it's still a very much a growing asset class. When I first started in 2003, there were about 25 MLPs. Today, there's 109 after last week. So it's grown significantly. There were 17 new companies last year. There were approximately 9 new companies this year so far. And there's no reason that couldn't double. Because there's a lot of assets that are either owned privately or that are owned publicly and non-MLPs that where MLPs could be formed. So we're sitting on about a $450 billion market cap asset class, which is no doubt significant. But I expect it to continue to grow from here, from the infrastructure needs that this country's going to need for the next several years. So right now there's over $100 billion of projects alone that these companies have announced that are going to be built over the next 3 to 5 years. And actually there's been some concern that the backlog of project growth had started to slow, and it had. But actually this past quarter there was $30 billion of additional projects announced, which is obviously a significant number on top of the $100 billion we have already. So that actually has started to accelerate as these companies have found more opportunities to move energy around this country, if you will. And you can hear some of the correlation numbers that I mentioned in terms of how the asset class behaves versus some of the other assets out there.
Ray, that's kind of a key number that you can't see, but the correlations to the S&P 500 is 0.54. Correlation to the 10-year treasury is 0.33, and the correlation to actual crude oil prices is 0.36. So that's one of the reasons we like the asset class, was its low correlation to other asset classes.
And lastly, just on that emerging side of things, in terms of in the institutional interest in this asset class is really just beginning. So people like yourself are just starting to look at this. The asset class is still owned about 65% by retail people, so only about 35% is actually owned by large institutional investors. So that's beginning to change. Trust me, we've done a lot of presentations the last 24 months, if you will, and institutional interest is growing, so there's going to be demand for this asset class. On 14 is really how we're set up from an organizational standpoint. The takeaway is our team there in the middle. We have a three-person team. I've been doing this, I've been researching MLP since 2003. My colleague Mark Easterbrook, he's been doing it since 1996, basically kind of since the inception of things. And my other colleague Matthew Nall has been working closely with me for the last 5 years. So we definitely operate as a team. I head the team, but I only have one vote. So when we try to make an investment decision, everyone has the same vote. We try to reach consensus, we generally do. So that's how we operate. Kind of getting more into the details of our strategy itself on the next few pages. I highlight a few things on page 15. Number one is that we're probably one of the few firms out there that has over a 10-year track record. I don't think so many people go back that far, but we do. And then what makes us different is that we've been using the same fundamental research process at Westwood for the last 30 years. We've been pretty successful using it, and so it's no different when we're looking at MLPs. We take this holistic approach that we call, which is really just a well-rounded approach to the asset class, which I'll talk about in a second. And we also have a focus on risk management, which I think is definitely a differentiating factor for us, and I'll elaborate on that a little bit further as well. And then lastly, we do include some non-MLPs in our portfolio. Not too many, only about 10% right now. But the point there is that as a firm, we cover the entire energy landscape. And so we really want to be able to leverage off of that flexibility and put really good ideas into your portfolio. But just keep in mind, they'd have to be MLP-like. they would have to get, you know, they have to have assets that are energy related, so they wouldn't be something unusual. On 16 is something I want to, it's really a key takeaway, and that's this well-rounded investment process that I spoke to, and that's the fact that we don't believe this asset class operates in a vacuum, and there's a lot of other outside factors that are very important to analyze when you're looking at individual MLPs. And as a firm, we have the advantage of leveraging off the 16 research analysts that we have that are covering all parts of the economy. And so really being able to look at all of these factors has helped us be successful. So two things drive energy infrastructure investment over time. Number one is just the demand for energy, how that changes over time, where it's coming from. And then number two would be where the source of supply is coming from, if you think of it that way. So kind of that's the supply and demand dynamic of what's happening in the asset class. And so, you know, to spell this out would be, on the supply side, we have two energy analysts that are covering all the publicly traded producers in this country. And so really staying in front of what's happening with this production and supply is really the leading edge to what is needed in terms of energy infrastructure, which is what the MLPs do. They really are just the middlemen that provide all the logistics, the assets to move energy from point A to point B in this country. And then so conversely, on the demand side, we've got analysts, we have a utilities analyst, we've got a refinery analyst, we've got an industrial analyst, a petchem analyst, and so we're following all the major users of energy. And so that's also a leading edge in terms of what's structurally happening, in terms of how energy is used in this country and what that might mean for energy, for infrastructure needs. So again, that's another leading edge in terms of what's happening with MLPs, and it's really helped us be early in a lot of our MLP investments, and it's helped with our performance.
I should just need to add on to Todd saying about the holistic approach. I mean, this is really something that differentiates us from our competitors. This is a very important part of our business, but in reality, it's a pretty small part. We only have about $500-600 million in MLP assets out of our $15.8 billion. So that all those other assets are invested in sectors that, in one way or another, impact MLPs. And as Todd showed you that page with the deep investment team, we have those analysts that are letting the MLP know, team know, how those other sectors are impacting MLPs. And that's something that very few, if any, of our competitors can say, they've had those inputs from the other sector analysts. That really helps, and it gets back down to the risk management, and that helps on the risk management side in terms of, you know, impacts from interest rates or impacts from end users in terms of petrochemicals and stuff like that. So it's a real important part of what we're doing.
So on 17, just to keep it brief, we have a very formal and straightforward investment process, so it is formalized. You know, I'm just not making the decisions. My other two teammates aren't making decisions. It really starts at the research analyst level, where we're covering all the MLPs. And so once an analyst has an idea, we have to present that idea to a formal research group. And the research group is like a peer review process. And so that's where we vet the ideas. We go back and forth. And if an idea is approved, then it can be considered to be put into a portfolio. So it's straightforward. The next is on 18, and this is probably the second key takeaway, and this is how risk management really starts at the analyst level. The first thing we do as an analyst is we focus on the downside. We spend a lot of time using various methodologies in terms of quantifying the downside. We look at historical asset multiples, stress case scenarios, things like that. And the important thing is when we're doing the downside that it's measurable, and that it's tangible, and that it's tolerable. Because there's companies out there that, you know, maybe have a business model that you can't do that. It's kind of more of a black box business model, like a, you know, Goldman Sachs or something like that. Here, that's not the case. And so we really start off with the downside, making sure that it's tolerable. Next, we go about doing our own analysis and determining the upside prospects for the company. And we really prefer to invest when we get this asymmetric upside downside scenario. And those are the ideas we think are, you know, make the most sense of our portfolio.
And that's the same for large cap. This is the same investment process that we use in the large cap.
So on 19 is really the portfolio level, and then the key takeaway here is a couple things. There's another layer of risk management at the portfolio level, and that's where we aggregate the portfolio in terms of various risk exposures, like geographic risk. As you can imagine, you don't want all your companies to be, you know, in the Permian Basin in Texas. That would obviously be a lot of exposure there. So we make sure that we're geographically diverse, that our producer concentration is diverse, that the different asset types within MLPs, we maintain diversity there. And so, clearly there's just another layer of risk there, management in terms of portfolio management. And then we have a sell discipline across the portfolio, and that is several things. Number one is that if one of our holdings is down 15% over a 30-day period, we don't sell it, but it triggers an automatic review of why we own that security. So there's a built-in check there to make sure that we haven't missed anything. And so we have a thesis of why we own every one of our holdings. And so we're able to check to make sure nothing's changed in terms of that holding. Next, we've got price targets on all of our holdings. So if that's achieved, then obviously we would sell the security if we want. That's the details of how we do it. The next few pages are really about our performance.
How can I make the volume louder on the telephone?
That increases our volume.
Yeah.
Is that any better, Ray?
Is that any better?
No.
Can you hear me a little bit better?
Ray, is that any better?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm on page 21. Okay, I'm sorry. This is our performance track record since inception. So as you can see, we've got a very strong track record over time. So I think that should give you some confidence in us. On 22 is our portfolio, how it looked at the end of the second quarter. This is just by the individual sectors, and as I said, a lot of the MLPs are in this midstream area, and that's where you can see the bulk of our assets as well. So as a reminder, the portfolio is built from a bottom-up perspective, so wherever the analyst is finding value is really how the portfolio is going to be constructed. We don't have a top-down view of propane MLPs are good or bad necessarily. It's going to be if we think individual companies are undervalued. Next would just be some of the other areas we're finding value in terms of some of the general partners versus limited partners. And that's really a byproduct of, we think, since growth is accelerating, that's where you want to be. And then since our benchmark only has 50 MLPs in it, and there's over 100 out there, naturally, we're able to find value outside of our benchmark, which would be that second bullet point. And the last one would just be, in terms of all of that production growth I'm talking about, you really want to be in those companies that have exposure to those basins that are growing. On 23 is the portfolio characteristics. The takeaway here is that our portfolio is on the left, our index is on the right. We've got better balance sheets, we've got better coverage ratios, so that means the amount of cash flow, excess cash flow that our companies are generating versus what they pay out is better than our benchmark. We've got better growth rates, we've got a better total return prospect. If you marry the growth and the yield together, if you look at the multiples, you're not paying up too much for all of those characteristics, which we think is pretty compelling. On 24 is upside downside capture, and it's one of my favorite slides because it really bears out what we do on the risk management side. And that's the fact on the right-hand side, those down bars, that we only capture about 85% of the downside historically since inception, and we're still able to capture more than 100% on the upside. So very compelling, and evidence that what we do on the risk management side does have some effect. On 25 is some portfolio statistics. We kind of touched on a lot of these things in terms of returns and volatility of returns, and obviously that our alpha is really high, things like that. Now, just to wrap up on my end, I'd say that we've got a well-experienced team. We know what to look for in this asset class. We've got that advantage of leveraging off that depth of our research staff that Ken and I talked about, and that focus on risk management are differentiating factors for us.
Great. And then you see the next couple pages here, the proposed vehicle again is the commingled fund. And you can see here the fee schedule. The actual standard fee for the commingled fund is 110 basis points, but based on the relationship we have with a large cap portfolio, we're able to offer you the multi-strategy discount, which comes down to about 75 basis points for the proposed mandate. So again, we're very happy to be working with you guys for over 4 years now, and look forward to a long, mutually beneficial relationship in large cap, and hopefully in MLP as well. So again, thanks for just taking the time to hear us talk about it, and happy to take any questions you might have.
I'll show you too. On page 28 and 29 of the book, they talk about some of the benefits of that commingled fund, not the least of which is it's really avoids any kind of tax filing issues that could come up with these things. Even though you're a tax exempt entity, it's kind of unclear on, particularly on UBTI. I think K1, if you were an individual investor and owned and had a separately managed portfolio of MLPs, you would literally have to file a K1 in every state where they generate income. Correct me if I say anything wrong, but you have to file a K1. As a pension fund, we don't think you have to do that. Pretty clear. I think Lee agrees that you can pretty much put the K1s in the drawer, but what was still unclear was the UBTI, which is unrelated business taxable income. The likelihood of having it's pretty low. We'll probably talk about that more with the next presenter, but the likelihood of having it is fairly low. But if there is any generated in this portfolio, it's at the fund level, not at the plan level. So there's no additional filing or tax filing requirements by the plan. You just get a little knockdown in your return on the net. You know, a net return, like a mutual fund, takes its expenses out before you get the return. It'd be the same thing. But we don't think we're gonna have to see that. You also have daily liquidity in this fund, and it is for pension funds only, qualified funds only, public funds, and other pension funds. So we like the vehicle, and the track record kind of speaks for itself. One of the questions you may have when you look at the very beginning of that, at least popped in my head, so why didn't you bring this to us earlier? Look at this track record. Well, if you'll remember, he said 10 years ago, or in 2003, there were only 26 MLPs out there. This asset class wasn't liquid enough for an institutional plan like yours to own. And that has changed rather considerably over the last several years, and that's one of the reasons why we're introducing it to you now. It's $400 billion plus in assets. There's 109 different issues out there, and it's growing. So we're comfortable with it from a liquidity standpoint. But any questions for these guys before we...
Attorney standpoint.
Yeah, okay. Will the side agreement similar to the one that we just got lost in the fire?
Yes. I'm talking about the multi-strategy discount, that part, or just the actual...
The terms.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think we just had a meeting Thursday. Todd was just ready by phone. Ken was there in Winter Park, and Scott was there and indicated that you guys had done, he felt like, you know, you already had those in place. It'd be pretty easy to get a contract in place based on some other stuff. Good.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jill.
Thank you. All right, check out me live a couple of days, right?
Great day.
Thank you very much, guys, a lot.
And I'll puzzle down.
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Any questions on that before we bring Miller Howard in? Miller Howard, I believe that's Kansas.
I remember, right?
My company mixed up. They're in Kansas, but this is what they do. And they do not have a fund. It'll be a separately managed portfolio that they'd be looking at with you. A good firm for this strategy, been around a long time, kicking the tires, due diligence work on all these firms that we recommend, and they rose to the top. So.
These guys are all in stock.
New York, okay. Yeah, Tortoise is out of Kansas City. Sorry.
Got mixed up.
Ready?
All
right.
All right, Stephanie, the floor is all yours. So Stephanie Geller from Miller Howard. We have Stephanie. You might want to sit here, actually.
Yeah, hang on. We've got a board member who's on the phone with us.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, then you're right. This would probably be a better place.
Okay.
Set. So you all have the handouts that in front of you. And my understanding is I've got approximately 15 minutes or so to go through the presentation. I would assume at this point, since you just heard from the other group, that we don't need to cover the basics on MLPs. And kind of, I always ask the question, you just never know. So feel free to, at any point if you wanted to interrupt me and ask a question, feel free to do so. I want to start by thanking you for giving us the opportunity to present to you today. My name is Stephanie Geller from Miller Howard. I've been in the industry, and I actually hate to admit this, but 22 years, and on the asset management side of the business for the last 17, and I'm one of the team members. I'm a vice president of sales and marketing. I flew up from Boca Raton this morning, so from Fort Lauderdale up here to Orlando, then head over to Little Rock, and I'm thrilled to be a part of the Miller Howard organization. I think there are a few unique characteristics of us as a firm. I've put things into perspective. Portfolio management team is comprised of four individuals. Those four individuals have a combined 120 plus years of experience in the asset management business. They are also supported by three senior and one junior research associate. So we are actively involved in the process of what we do in managing the money. Key being that the decisions are made by the portfolio management team. We are 100% employee owned. And you will find that within the organization that we are committed to the products that we offer to the growth of the organization, that we currently have under management approximately $6 billion in assets. Of that, between our income equity strategy and our all MLP strategy, which is what I'll be focused on today, about $2 billion of that is in MLP assets.
I want to put a belly.
Pardon me? Right?
What?
Oh, okay, I didn't know if you said something to us.
No, I was talking to our nurse who's
here. Okay, I'm sorry. One of our board members is in the hospital and he's on a conference call with us. So.
Well, he's in the hospital.
Yes.
That's dedication.
Yes.
All right, take it easy there. Kind of going back to the MLPs and the space, we started out as a research organization that we've been in the pipeline MLP assets since 1997, but that we actually owned the pipelines before they were in MLPs and were in C Corps in the energy and utility space going back to 1991. As you would compare that, I think, to a lot of firms and individuals, we have, I think, more experience in the space than a lot of managers today. We clearly are seeing that the interest level in MLP, both with individuals as well as institution, has grown dramatically over the last 5 years. I can tell you that Roger Young, one of our senior portfolio managers, has owned MLP assets going back to when there were 10 publicly traded MLPs. You look at that comparatively to where we're at today, where there are just over 100 MLPs that trade on the exchanges, and that you have probably only a handful coming out, but you also only have a capitalization of about half of Exxon, that you're looking at about $480-500 billion in total assets available within the space. So it's still a very small space. The history of all of what we've done has really been focused on a couple of key areas, and that is we really are looking to own companies that have three criteria. One, high current income. Two, growth of income. Three, high quality products. You'll find that we have a history of success in these type of assets, which is why you'll find that MLPs are a key to the strategies that we have and that they meet that criteria exactly. As I mentioned, we run a variety of other strategies, but they do all have those core characteristics. And one of the things that we find within MLPs today is that you really do have the ability to go broad spectrum. if you want to be an upstream, get into your EMP, where you're looking for the exploration, you're looking for some of the drillers in today's marketplace, clearly you're taking on additional risk in that space. I cover Texas as part of my territory as well. So clearly get a hands-on view of what's happening with that space. But you will find that as we go out, even with today's technology, with hydraulic fracturing, et cetera, that on the drilling side of the equation, that most wells still come up dry. So you're out there. We clearly do not want to be in that space. Second thing is you find the midstream. About 79% of our portfolio is in that area of the market. And then finally your downstream, which is where you get to your enablers, you get to retail for those of us. You know, I live here in Florida, not so much natural gas at the household level as what you would see in the Northeast. Do not want to be concerned what price of natural gas is and whether we have a hot summer or a warm winter and utilization. So for us, that midstream pipeline area is the space that we want to be in. If you look at the Alerian Index today, it's very bifurcated. You have very large companies, very small companies. One of the things that you have to be aware of in that space is that you can have liquidity issues. At $6 billion in assets, clearly someone who's well-known and has been in the space for a long period of time, but also we do not run into liquidity issues. When you're buying accounts every day and funding them, the float, or as you would say, that's available out in the marketplace is not an issue. Should you find yourself on the second half of that equation where you need to sell a position or have a desire to sell a position, one of the factors that we keep in mind is how long it would take to be out of a position. And that would be, you know, we would like to be out of that position in a matter of days, not find ourselves in a situation that it would take weeks to be in that position. When you go through that, it's going to scale down from your Alerian Index, which is currently comprised of 50 names. It's going to take probably the bottom 15 out of the equation just from a liquidity standpoint. But our size also allows us to be nimble and yet still have the experience and the history of being in the space to manage them. We work with several entities in the state of Florida, such as yourself, that we manage the MLP assets for. So we're really looking for the key ingredient right now within our portfolio. Current yields almost 5.25%, 5.3%. And when you look to the space, there are higher yielding MLPs out there. We do not necessarily want to own those, because the second characteristic and component that's equally important for us in the process is the growth of distributions. So you might give up a little bit on the yield side. What you really want to achieve is the best yield you can, and also the growth rate is very important to us. For example, this year, to put in perspective, we've had 40 dividend distribution increases in the MLP strategy year to date. What we're seeing in this environment right now, that's an accelerated pace even over what we saw last year. Most of the experts in the research as you go out there, including our own, would have signified that the expectation would be in the 6-7% rate. What we've seen so far year to date, now that we're in the middle of August, that's probably going to come in above 8%. So you're seeing the growth of those distributions at an accelerated pace. We think there's a couple of factors that contribute to that. One is this energy renaissance that you're seeing in America. You know, what we're seeing here in Florida, third pipeline coming in out of South Texas. I'll tell you, I was sitting on a plane, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago. It seems like I sit on a plane every day. And this is, you know, don't be nervous. You're going to hear a couple of really big booms and a big cloud of dust. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't like hearing that when I'm sitting on a plane at an airport. Well, the reality is that if you look out the right-hand side of the plane, FPNL is blowing their 1960 coal plant right here at Fort Everglades and replacing it with a clean-burning natural gas plant. And so you kind of hear this big boom, and next thing you see four huge smokestacks and the plant leveled in 60 seconds. So what we're seeing is that one, there is a continuation of development within the United States that we are having to utilize rail and trucking only as a result of the fact that we need hundreds of thousands of miles of pipeline in America today if we're going to achieve anything remotely close to energy independence. The infrastructure build-out is going to continue. Those projects and what's happening within those companies today from the utilities, C-Corps have these mature assets in these pipelines like Spectra Energy that are going to continue to drop them into these MLPs. These projects are going to stay on track to where we can become a net exporter of natural gas, but also facilitate the need and demand for companies such as FPNL, such as Nucor, which is in Louisiana right now, which is moving their plant, which they moved from Louisiana offshore, are now moving that plant back onshore. Because of the abundance of clean burning cheap natural gas, it's more lucrative, less expensive, and efficient to manufacture back in the United States again than to manufacture abroad and import it. So those are pretty significant changes to what we've seen in the last 20 years here in the United States. One of the big things, though, that we look at is the fundamental research. Dividend distribution is one of the key components to what we're looking at. So we're looking at the balance sheets. We're looking at that distribution coverage rate. Does the cash flow cover the amount of the distribution and also give them the ability to continue to grow those distributions? The underlying assets. The research, we go, we visit these companies. I did the analyst meeting for Plains All American out in Midland, Texas last year and had the ability to go in, see the facility, watch what's happening, where the oil flow with the organization is taking place. There's a high barrier of entry for these companies. You got a 17-inch pipe 8 feet down, you have the right of way to the 42-inch pipe that they want to put next to it. So one of the things is understanding those projects. For us, we don't look at the MLPs in a vacuum. We are looking at the full spectrum. So we are looking at the projects. We're looking how those are accretive to the deal. How much time will it take? What is the coverage? Who is the client? Who is the tenant? What is the financial capacity behind that? So we look at them as kind of what we would call affectionately utilities without walls, because it really does tie into that space. For us, we also look to maintain. We typically have a longer hold on these positions, and that the turnover is not high. 18 positions currently in the portfolio fluctuate somewhere in the neighborhood of 17 to 20 names, probably not significantly higher or lower at any one time to have in that portfolio. But the turnover in that is typically 10 to 15%. For you, you don't have the tax consequences or so that it has the same impact that it could to an individual, but something just as a measure of our philosophy and strategy around owning the MLP space. One of the things too is within that turnover, though, there are sell disciplines. Clearly, if anyone should we find them in a position that they did not have the dividend coverage rate, that to continue to maintain that, or they cut the dividend. People think that no MLPs ever cut the dividend, cut the distribution rate. Well, it has happened. And so having an awareness and a history of owning MLPs, looking at their coverage, looking at the projects, the cash flows, very important to us. Or if we find ourselves that we're in a position today where we don't think they'll have the ability to grow those distributions, we want that inflation hedge built into this portfolio. Clearly, balance sheets, credit ratings, again, follow the money, as Roger says. If we think that they are taking on projects that are not beneficial, that they're overvalued, the distribution coverage rate, or kind of the third is, you know, if we just find a better opportunity. You know, occasionally you'll buy an MLP, it kind of does exactly what you want it to, but a better story comes along. We tend not to hold much cash within the portfolio, so occasionally we will have to sell a position to buy a better idea. I think one of the factors that is a characteristic of Miller Howard within our MLP space, we do not equally weight the positions. So you may find, based on our conviction level, that we might have a 1% weighting, we might have a 20% weighting. We are not index huggers in that we are not going to look at the index and say, well, the index got 15, so we have to have 15. anytime you go away from that, we're clearly aware of the index and the weightings that they exist, but we have no problem being underweight or overweight significantly to that index based on our research and our comfort level within the names in the portfolio. We utilize the distributions by conviction to rebalance. For example, we have a new position, maybe we have a 3% weighting, those distributions are coming in on a daily basis. We may increase that position from a 3% weighting to a 5% weighting because we like what's happening within the company. At the same time, even if it's the best name in the world, we also use a common sense overlay, and that is we will trim a position if it becomes too large within the portfolio. With that being said, I think, how did I do on time? Pretty good? Again, I kind of reiterate, for us, our history of understanding energy, understanding utilities, understanding and owning the C-Corp assets that tie directly and correlate exactly to the MLP space, and that's where these assets, most of them, came from originally, but also looking at the full range of the enablers, the end users, as well as the MLP, the pipeline space, who has the geographic monopolistic assets as we continue to build infrastructure today. Those are the names. We want to have clear risk controls, maintain a portfolio that has a high current yield, growth of yield, and good quality companies.
Can you have the carve-out information in your performance? That carve-out was from that, if I'm remembering right, that was from the equity income strategy?
It was.
Where you didn't actually have your separate MLP strategy, standalone MLP has only been around since about 2009?
Yeah, believe it or not, yeah, we had 20% plus or minus weighting of MLP assets in the income equity strategy going back to 1997. And we always liked the space, we owned the C-Corps, so we were already following and doing the research behind them. And we had a number of our clients who really were embracing the space, and it kind of was, if you build it, we will come. Right. So the inception date of the all MLP strategy is December 31 of 08. And if you think back to the time, you know, we're coming out of, you know, a very difficult market. And we actually, at the time, well, Miller will tell you, Miller Howard, he wanted to just load up on MLPs. We looked at the business model, we looked at the financial strength, we looked at these companies and felt like they were going to be, with the energy renaissance, everything taking place, the balance sheets, a lot like utilities, the low debt environment, that they would be very well positioned going forward. And so we accepted the all MLP strategy December 31 of 08, so the history is 4 years now and that. So the carve out is from the MLPs that we held within the portfolio and equity.
What do you see as the biggest risks to the, I have to ask this really, the biggest risks to the asset class?
Yes. You know, most people would say that the biggest risk is if we moved into and had a very quick and rapid spike in interest rates. Obviously the cost of borrowing, and they do carry about 50% debt, 50% equity. So most people would say in a significant rising interest rate environment, clearly there's risk cost of borrowing because they do carry a lot of debt. I would say to you in the same breath, we do not feel like that is the environment today. Fed's come out and said that at some point they do taper. We believe at some point interest rates will go up. They have to go up. We also look at it from a perspective, though, that if interest rates are going up because the economy's good, then that's a good thing. Expectation out there in the marketplace. I would say to you, though, in this environment, if the economy is good, interest rates go up, projects get funded, which means that infrastructure build-out that we've started, we don't think that goes away anytime soon. We think that's the next 20 to 30 years, not the next 3 to 5 years. The second risk is counterparty risk, in that you have tenants that can't make payments. Most of these contracts are 2 to 12 years within the MLP space. So you have long-term contract, most of them have inflation hedge, they go across state lines, they're FERC regulated, so they can charge PPI plus 2.65 for about the next 3.5 years. They're set on 5-year intervals. So you really don't have a lot of risk behind that. Obviously, if your clients are ExxonMobil, they clearly have the cash flow to pay their bills on time, so we think that's a nominal risk. Within the space today, I think people worry that some of the names have, that there's too much money chasing too small of a space, that too many individuals will, as institutions, are moving into it. We don't see that at all. This is not the dot-com bubble, where, you know, the money chasing a handful of names was clearly unsustainable. So from that perspective, we see little risk in this space.
What about the tax code?
We think the chances of the tax code on MLPs changing is slim to none. There's a couple of key reasons why we believe that. First and foremost, it's a small space. Again, capitalization, half of Exxon. So if you change the tax status and they had to start to pay corporate tax, first of all, the amount of actual revenue generated is a rounding error. I mean, there's no real money to be made. Secondly, if you take on MLPs, MLP is a pass-through entity. So is a REIT. So is a CPA firm that's a partnership. So is a law firm that's a partnership. So you couldn't single out MLPs. You'd have to go with the tax code, which speaks specifically through pass-through entities. Well, I would be the first to say, I don't think anybody wants to take on that fight. Most politicians are lawyers, which means they own partnerships. I think the biggest thing that you're saying, though, is really twofold. One, that there are right now legislation being discussed which would allow both wind and solar to become MLPable assets. They would not look to want to be MLPable if they thought the tax was going to change. And I guess the most obvious, they're creating good jobs. They're bringing revenue in, they're addressing the unemployment. And so if you're in a state, why would you want to change the tax code on something that's not going to generate any revenue that would be detrimental to what's happening within your own community, what's happening here in the United States, to build out the infrastructure to create the jobs? So for that reason, we do not believe that it has happened. Even if it were to happen, MLPs would probably still continue to do well. On the short term, they would probably take a little bit of a hit, but with the tax and the structure and the business model that they operate in, it wouldn't end, I think, the need for the asset class as part of an asset allocation within a portfolio.
So besides large inflation, do you see any other vulnerabilities?
Well, I think you also, you know, when you look to the space, obviously headline risk on a individualized basis, in that, unfortunately, you have an explosion, you have some other disaster that takes place, would not affect the entire space, although it would raise questions. It certainly would impact that individual position that you might hold. Risk, I think people assume that, you know, if the space gets overbought, that it's expensive, that there could be a pullback within that. But again, that's very short-term thinking. On the long-term, you invest in MLPs, I think you have to be looking at a long-term time horizon. So from that perspective, the current yields, with them really not finding themselves, I think, in a position that they're going to come up with competition to fixed income, that's the concern, is that all of a sudden MLP assets are going to be competing, you know, with the 10-year treasury. We don't think that happens anytime soon. Spread right now, MLPs trade and borrow at investment grade. So one of the things that we monitor closely is what's the spread between where the 10-year treasury is and what the distribution rate of the MLP is. We're still in very positive zone there, and that you're about 80 basis points plus in positive spread. So from that yield perspective, it's hard to say, wow, they sound too good to be true. But right now, it's very hard with what's happening in the space, the projects, the distribution growth rates. It's pretty hard to find something that you don't like about MLPs right now.
I would have to agree with that. It's sort of where we are because you got dividend yields, let's say in the 5% range. That's probably a little conservative overall, but 5% range, and you got growth projections, which are pretty hard to argue with when you look at the maps that show the fines and the domestic gas and oil fines and the ability with technology now to get to them. So if you pull it out of the ground, it's got to go somewhere, and this is investing in the pipelines and storage facilities to get it from point A to point B. And you're looking at growth rates there at least of 5 to 6%. So that distribution rate, I mean, that total return of 10% seems very reachable in expectation in this asset class just because of those two factors, the yield and the growth. So a rising interest rate environment, yes, they would take probably a short-term bump just because any dividend, if you're buying a stock of any kind that has a high dividend yield and interest rates go up, that dividend yield is less attractive. Might still be higher than what you can get, but it's still less attractive if rates go up, and that would probably hit this space in the short run. But what the rest of that dividend paying, high dividend paying space may not have is a growth rate attached to it like this that has to distribute under the MLP structure. It's not like a company making a choice whether they want to increase the dividend. They have to in the MLP structure.
Well, unlike a REIT, it's not a mandatory amount, so it's not really set at 90%. But historically, what you found is that it is. They do continue to distribute and continue to grow those assets, really to reward shareholders. You know, when you buy a master limited partnership, you become one of the partners. They want to reward you as a shareholder. Increasing those distributions is one way they achieve that.
Down capture, can you talk about that for just a minute?
Sure.
Down capture ratio.
Do you have a downside capture ratio in your book?
I found one area on page 18, I think. Looks like it's a good percentage, but there's really no separate chart on it. But is that like for the whole period there? Or?
Well, that's page 19. Page 18 is utilizing the carve-out, which would look at the period of 2008. Which the entire market.
On page 31, it mentions it again. I think the upside downside.
Your upside downside on 18 is compared to the S&P.
Correct, versus the Alerian Index, because it's carved out from the income equity.
I know we talk about sometimes the down capture, you know, we're kind of compared to the downside too.
Well, what you've seen historically over time is that you have a very low correlation of MLPs to the S&P 500. Actually, to not really correlates to your fixed income or your equity market. Really, they're kind of their own asset class. And so when you look at this, I'm looking at the Alerian Index, Russell 3000. This does not show on page 31. Those are benchmark performance, not Miller Howard performance specifically. So it's just showing how the various indexes, whether it's the S&P or the Russell 3000 and the Alerian Index, have performed in upside downside.
Do you know, on the top of your head without looking for a chart, do you have an idea what your downside capture ratio is relative to the Alerian?
I do. The MLP strategy, since inception, has a up capture of 101.10 and a downside capture of 96.23. So that's 1.10 alpha with a standard deviation of 1665. So yeah, I knew it was a little bit more than 100 on the upside, and that's updated. That's as of the end of second quarter.
And let me ask you a question about that. You're about $5.56 billion in assets right now.
It's yes.
Starting to get even more popular, obviously, the asset class. And the makeup of that index is very, very top-heavy, right? I mean, the top 10 names are 61% or something of the index. I don't think I remember it's right. It's close to that.
Yes.
So
that's correct.
which is fine if you're a big manager and you got a lot of money in this asset class and you can buy those liquid names, but do you find yourself having any problems buying the smaller names because you're so big?
You know, it's, we could have positions, but usually they're not the names we want. And the smaller names tend to be kind of your one-off pipeline, you know, not your geographically monopolistic companies. And so from a liquidity standpoint, the really small ones, yes, we're not gonna buy those. But even some of the larger small ones, if that makes sense. Most of the time, even with our research, we could take a small position and we have, you know, have clearly gone down the capitalization over time, and that we don't own just all of the big names. But the reality is, you know, I think we have the ability to own more of those names than a lot of our competitors that are very large, because they clearly don't, if you've got $10, $20 billion, that certainly creates a float environment. For us, you know, with $2 billion in it, we're still nimble enough to be able to buy the names if we want them. And that's really the key, is the research component, saying, are these the names we want? They tend not to be. You know, even kind of look at the first half of this year. You know, some of your smaller mid-cap names have done well. A lot of them also are in your EMP, which means you're taking on additional risk. You know, we want to find the upside potential. We want to do it with a minimal amount of risk to achieve the objectives. I feel bad kind of sitting there.
$5.7 billion total assets under management. That includes your other strategies. So it's 2 point what?
Well, that's combined. In the all MLP only strategy, it's about $1.6 billion. Okay. And then you have the 20% that's in IE, so it's okay. $1.6 billion in MLPs.
All right, any other questions? Ray, you got any questions?
No. Sleeping pills kicking in?
Either that or my presentation. Again, normal contract as per the other relationships that we manage would be applicable. Is that the question?
The question and the answer.
No, not to my knowledge. And I will tell you on a personal note that Lowell Miller has 100% of his IRA in MLPs, always has, and has never generated it. We have clients, again, we manage a number of these, and a growing number in the state of Florida, and that is not a concern for an individual or, you know, in the 300 plus non-taxable accounts that we have. That has never been an issue. Some of those exceed $50 million.
Well, I know it can be treated in, I mean, it has to produce positive taxable income in the aggregate. So if you've got offsetting, the chances of it are slim. We just want to, it seems to be unclear whether pension funds have to file if there is, but anyway, we'll talk about that.
Right, and you do have the ability to aggregate. You also have a $1,000 exemption for individuals, which would not be applicable here. But yeah, when you go through that and look at the space, and I don't give tax advice, disclaimer, I am not a CPA, I do not give tax advice. In theory, it's something that is a question that gets raised. In reality, I don't know that anyone can give you an example where that's been the case. Okay. End of the day. Well, again, thank you all very much for your time.
Thank you.
Have a good week.
Thank you.
Give me a minute.
I need a minute.
Thanks, you're very welcome. My cards. Because I think it was with John the first time. I've been with Burgess a couple of times. first time you and I got to speak.
Yeah.
So that's me.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you again.
All right, take it up.
I was trying to find that downside on all of her charts, so I couldn't find it. So.
Yeah, I've got to move them forward too.
As they said, 96%? Is that what it was?
96.23.
Versus 85 for Mitchell Westwood.
The intern?
Maybe we need to talk about separate management versus a commingled fund. Small versus large. Those are both. Both are. Got outstanding performance records.
Yeah.
If it's just based on performance, we can go any meeting, mighty vote, and make the correct answer.
Yeah, so both strategies are both good firms with good strategies. I mean,
you think that downside's a concern, though? I mean,
it's a little higher than Westwood's. Yeah, and Westwood's upside was a little higher. So. I guess if you had to look at it from that perspective, Westwood would have a slight advantage. Whether you like the commingled or the separately managed, you know, in a lot of portfolios, the separately managed structure, the good news is you'll see every name, you know what you hold. You can still see that in the commingled fund. You just don't own it directly. You own units of the fund, but they'll provide you with the information on what it is they hold in the fund. In this MLP space, as we talked about, that's why I asked the tax question. It does appear that the chance of any UBTI, at least historically, has been very slim. What I don't think anybody has a good answer for is going forward. You know, historically, you're only dealing with 20 companies that had MLPs, right? And so for now, we're talking about 109, and it's growing. Will those generate UBTI eventually? That could be, but. But she's dead right. I mean, there's nothing to indicate that it has been, and it is treated in aggregate. So if you've got 30 names in the portfolio, 15 have gains, 15 have losses, and it offsets, then you don't have any UBTI to worry about filing. So it's never happened. Any of the managers we talked to have never had UBTI, but they all mentioned it. But they've never had it. So in the portfolio as a whole. So Westwood took that approach that we're going to eliminate any questions about filing UBTI, any questions about whether you stick the K-1s in the drawer, any questions about tax filing, we'll take it off the table by starting this commingled fund where pension funds go into the commingled fund. And if there are anything like that does occur, it's taken care of and filed at the fund level, not at the plan level, so you don't have any tax. So I thought that was a pretty good strategy on their part. That's not to rule out the others, because these are good managers and people. Obviously, you heard Miller Howard's history in this business. They go way, way back. So Westwood's performance record went back to 03, and Miller Howard goes back just about that far when you do the carve-out. The carve-out is, they had the MLPs in another strategy and pulled that out and did their performance. Not quite as clean, but still gives a good idea what they can do in the space. So your options today, well, first of all, the first question is, do you have you heard enough on the asset class to feel comfortable committing some money to it?
Yes.
Okay. So the second question then is, assuming 5%, I went ahead and did this. Now, this stuff, I don't mean to be presumptuous either. I went ahead and did a draft of the IPS, putting a 5% target into the portfolio, taking the 5%, in this case, from stocks, and we can go over this if you're interested in doing it. We can go over it. 5%, you're at about $50 million right now, so 5% would be about $2.5 million. So the next question is, out of the two presenters today, did one stand out above the other? Would you want to split the assets, or would you want to talk to other managers? I assume option number three. I hope it's not option number three, because these are probably two of the best. So.
Yeah, I don't need to hear it from another manager.
Other than commingled and separately managed, everything is that I'm seeing from looking at the two books is almost.
Well, when I looked at the performance, if I was comparing the numbers right,
it looked like in the short run, Westwood had better performance, and then went out a little longer, Miller Howard's performance was a little better. I was looking if I was comparing apples to apples, because they had, the Miller Howard book had some confusing numbers, because some of their numbers were 631 and some were 630. You had to go back to 630. It was on a different page. Anyway, that's why I saw it was the short run performance. Westwood was a little stronger, longer term. Miller Howard was, they weren't too far off on it.
Well, I don't know. It's with this carve out thing.
That's a little bit.
I mean, if you're looking.
Yeah.
You compare this chart to that chart?
If you look on page, let's see, have a page number.
18.
Page 18 in Miller Howard.
Versus was, page 21 in Westwood, right?
That's what you're right. Those are both, those are July, those are June to June, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, for instance, the quarter, the year to date, well, let's look at fiscal, year to date, that's not apples to apples. That's calendar. So the 1 year numbers would be apples to apples here. 38% for Westwood versus 27 for, 26.9 for Miller Howard. Westwood far outperformed for the year.
And they only went back 9.
In 3 year numbers, 26.8 for Westwood versus 21. Then I went out to 5 years, it was 20.4 for Westwood versus 22 for Howard. But you start to get into the carve out period when you go out to 5 years with them. Oh, actually, I'm sorry, it's only 18.2. I was looking at the wrong number. 20.4 versus 18.2. No, it's 22. So they,
so, I mean, they're, so,
and they don't go 10 years, so.
So is Westwood's 20.1 for 10 year trailing a misnomer?
What, no, why do you say that? They have a 10 year track record, these guys don't.
Okay.
All right. They don't, they haven't done it. They don't have a 10 year MLP track record, these guys do. So relative to the benchmark, give out a quite a bit of value Westwood has. And so these, on the 9 year number, they're right in line with the benchmark.
The commingled fund, would it be considered a big fund in this space?
A big fund?
Or a big plan, the commingled fund?
Not really. They're only about 500 million in total assets under management. I think the fund is still at only about 200 million, but it seems to be growing kind of fast. It's getting a lot of interest because of that. Taking all those issues out. So they're, I think it's about a little bit bigger, about $1.5 billion, $1.6 billion. Yeah. I think that's what I should just, that's why I asked that question. And in that space, that's not, they're not, neither one of them are big enough that it's going to, at this point, to impact their ability to manage this money.
Okay.
We had another firm called Tortoise that we had in the lineup that presented. They were over $10 billion in the asset space. And we were starting to see they were not dipping down into any of those names down, you know, below the median. They couldn't get to them. They weren't liquid enough for those guys to put that kind of money to work. We had some other issues with Fortis, and they're not doing business in Florida anymore. They wouldn't sign on to some fiduciary stuff. And what they said in their due diligence review process with us and what their compliance people were willing to sign on to were not exactly the same. So that's why you had two firms in here.
Okay.
So, anyway, both of these firms, you've got some experience with Westwood. You don't really know Howard folks, but we're confident in them too. So whatever kind of jumped out at you, you split the money, go with one, whatever you
do. Do you have any clients that are already in this with Westwood?
Yeah, they just committed here recently. They just started this fund.
A tracker in their eyes.
No, the fund just started, but the fund should be, it is, we have confirmed that the fund is invested identical to the similarly, to the separately managed portfolios of Westwood. So, from that standpoint, we're comfortable that they're doing the same thing. When they buy anything for any account, it's going into the fund too, the same percentage. So,
they were hired, as I mentioned, by Commonwealth City Fire recently, at Burgess.
They were just hired by Winter Park Thursday.
Westwood was, or?
Westwood. And they were also hired by Palm Bay Police and Fire.
Well, I'm not trying to bag on it, but we have been talking for 3 or 4 meetings now about their lack of performance or lagging performance on
the value.
Yeah.
Well, let's actually come back a little bit. I'll show you, but...
I mean, I see that, but at the same time, that concern level is there. Is the same thing going to happen with this one?
Well, there's no guarantees, but as I told you on that, Westwood as a firm, I'm very comfortable with. That's a $15 billion firm started by Susan Byrne. Very solid firm with solid people. I went out and did the site visit. I've been there before, but I went out most recently in February. Met with Todd Williams and his team on the MLPs, in addition to going over the large cap value stuff with them to find out why they were struggling in this market. And again, in this up market, I think that the underperformance in the up market on the large cap value product is very explainable and easy to get your hands around, and they haven't underperformed that much considering how strong the bull market's been. In any period where we've seen the market kind of flip and fundamentals matter again, they've done well. They did well last quarter when the Fed just hinted at turning off the spigot. They did really well relative to their group. So you're going to see their numbers are a little above average for 3 years now, a little above average for 1 year on the large cap. So they've come back a little there. So the firm is solid. Their commitment to this product is solid. The team is solid. So is Miller Howard. I mean, there's no difference there. In terms of confidence in the firms, I wouldn't let that dissuade me from Westwood. We haven't had a whole lot of experience with Miller Howard from a client service perspective. They seem to be willing to commit what they need to commit to this market. So right now we're very comfortable with them. Wouldn't have them here if I wasn't. Westwood from client service and getting what you need to do. Kim's probably one of the best out there in terms of that. She does a good job, but you got to be comfortable with the firm.
That was my concern on that side. It's like through all the people that we've hired since I've been on the board, everybody comes in here and one of the first things they want to tell you about is outside capture. She didn't even know it. She had to go look at
that. Surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, that made me a little uncomfortable. I had to dig for it in the charts, and
that gets asked about every meeting.
I started to almost go, you might want to put that in the book, because when you're talking to pension funds, that's what we're going to be interested in.
No, I had to look, and that surprised me a lot. That's
the first time I've heard her.
So you see where that's what I'm saying. Right? You've got that. Yeah. Concern both directions.
Because they were both about even with me until that downside thing kind of came up. Then the middle, which is the 96% of it.
Well, it concerned me, I agree with Mike. She didn't know it. She should have known it.
Yeah.
She's the salesman.
Yeah. Well, I know, but another guy that I've seen from that firm is Brian Spratt. He's usually on where he must have a conflict today, but I don't remember him not knowing that. So it's something you usually, like you say, especially in a pension fund, and you guys have heard me preach it so many years, you're sick of it, but when I bring any manager search in here, I always say, this is what we like, and this is what we don't like about indexing. You know, you get 100% of the downside if you buy an index product, right?
It's like Westwood had a separate page on and talked about it.
Yeah, that's what they do. I mean, they're very great risk management, and that's what they do with all their products, and they continue that strategy in the MLP space. So.
The good news is if we've done our job right, you can't make any bad decision today in terms of the managers, but you never know. You know, we've hired some managers, and we're going to talk about one today that, you know, Perimeter just kind of got out of the starting gate slow and tripped. And I just went up and visited their team last week, did a due diligence, not tired, so we'll talk about them. But you can't always predict what's going to happen, but you can make make good decisions with the data you have in front of you today. So we got two good firms to choose from, and I wouldn't stand in the way of any.
So before we do make a decision here, we have to decide on that, right?
If you want to make a decision, we can do it either way, as long as we get it done today, I think. But this is quick.
I'm comfortable with $2.5 million. However, when I left last meeting, I thought we were going to take money out of the bonds to fund merit limited partnerships.
Well, we can do a couple of different ways. And this one, I didn't put it that way. But we've got 27. We're already down to 27.5% in bonds. And MLPs are a stock. They are publicly traded in their partnerships. Now, if we go from 2.5 to 5 million,
down the road, if we go a little higher percentage, which we might, depending on which markets, we might come in here and recommend we rebalance and consider going a little higher into MLPs, we could, you know, might come in and say, let's take our bonds down another 2.5% and go from there. And we've got the most liberal language now in the ordinance, so we have some freedom to do those kind of things. But what I did in this particular draft, because...
Can I give another policy guide?
Sorry.
Getting this over on the target.
So the red are the changes. So in this case, I just took the domestic equities down 5, plugged in master limited partnerships on page 3, gave it a range from 0 to 10%, allows us to take it up a little bit if we want to. I added that, though, because they are stocks, I added that to no more than 75% of the firm, of the total fund value restriction down on the under equity, but treated them as equity. I'm sorry, I added them on page 2, same places, publicly traded match limited partnerships, and added them to the benchmark. Sorry, Ray, this has got to be pretty exciting when you can't see what we're looking at.
I know it.
It's pretty exciting when you can't see what you're looking at. Page 5, master limited partnerships, added them, they're fully and easily negotiable. I think this is standard language. Lee's seen this before. I don't think there'd be anything there that would be objectionable. So as far as getting defensive too, Dane, we, if you remember the last meeting, we adjusted the fixed income benchmark.
Okay.
Remember, we shortened that half of the benchmark there so that David Furfine can take it shorter if he wants to get more defensive, so less fluctuation. That was approved at the last meeting, actually. So this would be the MLP changes to allow us to go into MLPs. If you're comfortable with that, I would suggest a motion to do so, and I brought some final drafts for signature for...
I'm comfortable with it.
Me too. I'm okay with the language that Larry's introduced here.
It diversifies, I mean, you're even more.
You heard the correlation numbers?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're talking about. This is all about risk management. I mean, we might get some nice total return out of it too, from what if the growth comes through like we expect it to in that industry.
I move that we adopt the statement of investment policy goals and guidelines revised August 12, 2013.
I'll second. Discussion? Ray, you clear on what we're talking about doing here?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
We're choosing between the two money managers.
And then, no, we're actually doing the policy right now.
Oh, okay.
We've got to change the policy first before we can choose a manager. It's just a reclassification of the target and adding the master limited partnerships to the formal investment state, you know, goal.
Okay, sure.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Opposed, none. Opposed, none. Passes.
This next is just a little cleanup item from last time. While we did do the investment policy revision, if you'll remember, and you probably won't, but I had an addendum drafted for Sawgrass fixed income, and I yanked it back because I spotted something that was a mistake in there. So this is just correcting that. This puts everything in line with what was in the investment policy. And what we did was we added this, they can't buy any more than 10% foreign, so we'll keep an eye on all that every quarter. But the main change was on the next page on the back, where we changed that benchmark from 100% Barclays Capital Aggregate Bond Index to 50% the aggregate and 50% the 1 to 5 year government credit. That's already been approved in the investment policy. This was had an error in it.
This was to give them the defense.
Yeah, get them to allow them to be more defensive. Risk management protects your assets in a rising interest rate environment. So I just, if you're all right with that, all it did was cleaning it up and making it consistent with the investment policy. So
which was already approved. So if I could get a motion maybe to accept that. I've also got finals of that for signature.
I've got signed finals already from Sawgrass.
Okay, good.
On that. And I was wanting to see the wording.
Yeah, make sure the wording's right.
Yeah, make sure.
Did that have a 10% form and then the... Yeah, pretty simple changes, so probably good.
54.
Was the date right on it?
No, they dated to June 14th and the adoption date on the front is blank.
All right, let's put the adoption date as today then.
Okay.
Very great.
It was dated May 14th from the last meeting in red.
Yeah, that's why I think we're going to have to use these. I'll send them to Sawgrass if you want me to.
That's fine.
I'll send them to Sawgrass.
Greg sent me. Sent me.
Yeah, that was the ones, and then I saw something at the last meeting, and I can't remember what it was.
I think you should have corrected ones. I think you corrected it and emailed them to them and you copied me on.
Okay.
And then they signed them.
All right, well, let's sign that then and just. Can we mark through the date? Just put it in the adopted date initially.
Put an adopted date in the left. And,
well, this
are you going to do the filings on these, Larry, or is Alicia doing those? Or Dale?
Okay. Filings with the state.
The file with the state, the city.
Yeah, I did the. I did the one we did back in May. I don't take care of all of those.
Okay. So I hate to do that to you.
Let me do that again.
That's okay.
Yeah. And then when it's
right. Convenient. So the difference between these and those is those are dated and these are.
No, they're actually not.
So that's good. Yeah. But these are already signed by Sawgrass.
All right, what we'll do is put an adopted date on the top of those as of today.
Okay.
And then we're fine.
Yep. And we need a motion to approve
that. We approve the Sawgrass addendum.
So I move we accept the Sawgrass asset fixed income policy addendum.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Okay, before we go through the report, you want to go through the report first or you want to make a decision on the MLPs?
No, let's finish the MLPs.
Go ahead, MLPs.
Want to take a 2-minute break?
Yeah. Yeah, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
I mean, I do too.
Yeah,
like, I want to need one myself.
I got to
drink water and not have a break, right? Okay.
So first,
what time are you supposed to get at work?
Well, that's fine.
What do you want at 3 to 3?
What do you want at? Well, you want to do the MLP decision and then you know, we're going to vote on the report. I go through the report in 2 minutes.
Whatever, however y'all want to do it, but I mean, we're working on the MLP and the investment stuff.
Yeah, I think we all should finish that.
Yeah, the effective date is 31 days from when it's filed with the city. It's going to take that longer to get the contracts all carefully in and we're going to hire somebody.
Greg, can I have child help, please?
Should I hold these for Matt's signature since technically he's chairman?
One will be able to be fairly soon.
Yeah, I could get one in the next hour or so. Get one in
the next hour.
He may have an arrest this morning about 10 to 12. Was tied up at the jail. He called me about 5 of 12.
Call me.
So I'm going to try to make it if I can, but I don't think I will. So.
Yeah, just call me at the world end if they call the city hall on it.
Just
okay, if they call something else, if they call something else, you can call me. And I'll go deal with it.
Yeah. I don't know how long the case was, but it's. Yeah, I should be able to go with him tomorrow or Wednesday and signatures on that and then.
I
think
there was a standard ground situation.
We just had one about a month ago. And the state attorney's office declined to prosecute on it. The 17-year-old.
17, yeah.
That's shot a 40-year-old man.
That's all the other way around. Most 40-year-old man shot a
17. I think it was a 17-year-old because they charged him with a firearm violation.
Ah, okay.
For being underage.
Okay.
Something like that.
That's not chump change.
Yeah, that was somebody Jacobs, I think, who got killed.
That's what our jump from
heard about the
jumping
it's terrible. Female employee down there apparently had sexual relations with a
actually, the last 10 years, she was having sex with. And this report said,
officers inside firefighter.
And a firefighter, and somebody said there may have 27 more.
Was that the one lately?
Yeah.
And she's doing press conferences.
Yeah.
So she, yeah, she's doing press conferences with her lawyer. It's like, she's doing a press conference with her lawyer, and her husband's holding her hand. I'm like,
yeah, she got kids. The state attorney had a report, 39-page report.
That door's supposed to be open.
It was hard to read. And there was one of the police officers. I've dealt for a while. He's on the pension.
Oh my God. They had a bunch. They said some fired, some resigned. They're going crazy down there.
They can't hire everybody right now because they can't hire enough people to replace everybody they're going to hire.
Where's this?
I used to work with them years ago.
Alright. Alright, so now we want to move on.
$2.5 million, I would recommend you move to the MLP space, and you guys tell me where you want to move it.
Ray, from what you heard, do you have a favorite out of the two?
From what I heard, I kind of favor Westwood out of the two because it has a very, very good long-term record, and they seem to be doing better in this phase of the market that we're in, and hopefully they'll continue to do better.
I mean, both the presentations were good. I just, overall, with both the numbers I've heard, I just kind of lean a little bit toward Westwood. My feeling.
I believe Westwood's the best of the two.
And I would have to agree. Plus, we have a relationship with them and we're used to working with them.
I'm putting it as an option too, so if you have any doubts, you want to be head to the back, you can go that route, but I'm comfortable either way. And obviously, I've got a couple of firms I would never bring them to you if I wasn't.
Okay, do we need a motion to transfer?
Need a motion to
transfer
to
get a contract along with
send a man down.
Motion to hire contingent upon contract.
Okay. I move that we hire Westwood to manage MLPs subject to a contract.
Second. Discussion, Craig? Anything?
Ray, anything you want to add to that?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the last thing you mentioned.
There was a motion to hire Westwood contingent upon a contract, and Doug seconded me.
Oh, yeah, I approve of that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Yes, good.
Okay, so then we need a motion to take the $2.5 million from
Equities.
Specifically, I'm a little slow, but I'm catching up. I was looking at actually with the current value, and then I lost it. But the answer is 1.25 from Westwood's large cap value, and 1.25 from 1.25 million, and 1.25 million from Sawgrass large cap growth.
I'll move that we take those amounts and move them to the MLP.
Well, Westwood's not going to really feel like you're
I was just throwing out there, they've got the assignment. This isn't going to add to their assets as much as they thought.
About half of what they thought, yeah. That's fine.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes.
Larry, will you ask Ken to send the documents to
me? I will do so.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you want to go through the report quickly?
Are you heard enough from me?
Well, shut up. No, because I know he's got a lot to say when he gets to him.
Yeah, we've accomplished
it. I can say I don't have that much today.
All right, go to page 3 real quick. In our report, for the quarter, you're up a little under 1%. To remember, April and May were really good months. Thought we were going to have a knockout quarter, and we ended up with June knocked it back down. So we ended up with a quarter up about a little under 1%. I'm on page 3.
What is that? Is that a...
He's talking to the nurse.
No, that would be net contribution. So we probably had some payouts and we had some money come in. And I don't know why we only ended up with 15.3. It's a small number. We usually don't see a number that small.
That's probably the first time I've ever seen a number that small.
Yeah, but I don't know why it was netted out that way. Sure, we had some activity during the quarter, but I have to go back and look at the individual. Do you know off the top of your head,
Dale? I know we gave back some refunds to people in the Justice Department that weren't
invested. We just had two people go on the drop that had $100,000.
Right.
Oh, didn't even think about that, yes.
When money didn't
end. Yeah.
It's been spent.
Going into the drop, affect the cash flow. Yeah. Just going into the drop, we did pay somebody out though, didn't we?
And they took a lump sum there.
Well, I know there was at least three people that got money back that were invested.
Randy Allison left.
He took his drop.
Yeah.
He took a large drop payout.
We could look in the
cut. A couple of others.
I'm just curious because I'm like, $15 to $39 is an awful small number.
Yeah, something added out, didn't it? Well, the line I wanted you to look at was the next one, $435,000 in earnings, and then you go over the fiscal year to date, a little under $4 million. A little under $4 million in earnings under fiscal year to date, and $5.9 million for the 1 year. Now, those fiscal year to date and 1 year, those numbers, those returns, 8.6% and 13.6%, those are net of investment management fees. And while they're a little bit below the target, I'll remind you that the way this plan is structured, I'm actually surprised we're keeping up that well in this bull market. Because we've sort of got a plan structured here with maybe 80 to 85% downside capture, but not quite 100% upside capture. So it's kind of, to keep up that well on the upside is not too bad in the kind of bull market we've had. Now that said, obviously we want to make that up when it goes the other way. Looking at the, and we'll look at some longer term returns here in just a second. Looking at the checklist pages on page 4 and 5. Purposes of time, I'll talk about the managers in a second. Go down to the section on page 5. The bottom part starts off with the equity portfolio. By the way, my book is like one page off. If you see me looking at the bottom, it's probably at the top on here because I've got this note section page on my copy. It usually confuses people, but you'll see where it says the equity portfolio, including convertibles. All those down below there, those are all compliance issues. If we had a no mark there, we'd be out of compliance and have to do something about it. Good news is we're all in compliance, so no issue. Page six is your asset allocation versus the target that exists as of today. You just adopted a policy, though, that took that target of 42.5 down to 37.5. So we're rather significantly overweighted. That's why I said let's take the $2.5 million from a large cap equity. You can see on the bond side we're right at the target.
We only need one.
We only need one, not two, okay.
Hey, Ray, we heard that.
I've done this for 35 years. I was on ID count.
This is the first. Well, that's not even a reference to my report.
Derek?
Yeah. Oh, where was it? Well, we're a little underway to the convertible, underway to the international. The real estate is actually up to a little bit over $1 million as American Realty has made a couple more capital calls, and I think we got another one coming up here maybe in October, from what I understand.
Will that get us fully in then?
I forget the total amount we committed. I got a
two.
No, yeah. I don't think so yet. I don't think they're going to call that much. Might get surprised, but I don't think they have that much in the queue. The allocation on page 7 and by the managers, and again, I just recommended that you take, and you just voted to take $1.5 million, or $1.25 million from Sawgrass and Westwood, those two large cap managers. Makes the right place. Look at the numbers on page 9. These are gross of fees. You'll see for the quarter, you beat the benchmark, but down about two-thirds of the way down where it says total, you're up 1.1%. Notice the market value, by the way, was $50,624,000. July was a good month, and I can tell you that the market value... down somewhere. It's 52. It's over 52 million. It's about 52,500,000.
You wrote it on a page of lines.
Huh?
You wrote it on your notes page.
No, I didn't. I wrote it down. So it'll pop up here on another page probably. But anyway, I had an email on it. It was 52,500,000 or something at the end of July. So we were up another 3.8%. Do you remember that number? As we're sitting here, as of August 9th, actually, we were up to 52.5. So fiscal year to date was 9.1 as of June 30th. As you can see there, that's actually over 12% as we sit here today, probably close to 13 as we sit here today. 14.3 on the trailing 1 year, 8.1 per year the last 2 years, 12.2% per year for the last 3 years. So that's an annualized number. So obviously these markets have been good. 5 year, we're still at 5.9, and that still includes 2008.
But that comes up every, that comes up every quarter.
Well, look at the next page, and you'll see it's going to drop off.
Mm-hmm.
At the next quarterly report, we'll be dropping off on the 5 year average, you're dropping off a minus 14% number. And right now, if everything stayed as it is today, we'd be replacing it with over a 12% positive number. So a lot of the averages are going to improve rather significantly if we can just hang in there. Your plan relative to other public pension funds is on page 11. And again, the plan's doing fairly well. You're on the top 15% for the quarter and the top 21%, oddly enough, for all the other time periods. There's an odd, that's odd. I'm going to take another look at that, but where you shook out in that universe. And I do know based on your numbers, it would be in the top quartile from what I've seen. So those are probably accurate. They're pretty close to the benchmark, so that's why the 21st percentile stays consistent with all the target and the funds. So plan pretty healthy, held up well in this market environment and keeping up pretty well in a bull market. Sawgrass on page 12, doing a good job for you. You can see the numbers in the middle of the page relative to the benchmark. They're ahead for all the time periods there, and ranking in the top 33rd, top 2, top 16, top 19%. So they're doing a great job for you in that large cap growth space. Westwood is improving, as you can see, for the quarter, up 4.3 versus 3.2. The fiscal year was 17.4 versus 17.6. 1 year, 24.4 versus 25.3. And then you can see the 2 year and the 3 year number, 18.29 versus 18.51. Still below the benchmark. You don't pay them not to beat the benchmark, but I think it is, as again, I went out to visit them, talked to the team. Actually, we have visited with them several times. We did a site visit back in February. They said things were improving. So far, that is true. They're a little bit above average. They're in the top 48% for the 1 year, top 48% for three, and a little below in the 2 year. We haven't had a down cycle since you've been with them, so you really haven't seen that downside protection that they promised or that they advertised. That's usually where they add a lot of value. So to keep up in a bull market this well, I would actually say they're doing a pretty good job for you, and certainly doing what we sort of expect to see from them.
We'll go through the full cycle. If they haven't gained some more ground in a down market, then they might have a different issue.
Frontier has been a great hire for you on page 16. Top 11%, up 32.89% for the year. Even though they had a difficult quarter, their fiscal year-to-date number is great and their one-year number is great. So they've done a good job for you in that small cap value space. Perimeter, probably the biggest question mark. And as I think I promised to you at the last meeting, I would do a site visit, kick the tires. Did that just last Monday, as a matter of fact, up in Atlanta. Visited a couple managers, including Perimeter, spent a few hours with them. They actually have started to improve a little bit already, but they're not, what I've tried to confirm, and I'm very familiar with this team, I actually used to work with Sunbank Capital when they merged with Trusco out of Atlanta, and this team was, Mark Garfinkel was the portfolio manager here, was part of the small cap growth team for them out of Atlanta. And so I knew the process, and he had a good longer-term track record, trying to get my hands around what was going on, why he was struggling. And it's kind of the same answer you've heard from a lot of these managers, that they've had some good names, good balance sheets, good income, good cash flow, and the market didn't care. It just kind of, the junk was rising to the top. So things were improving a little. As you can see, the one-year number is the 65th percentile, 23, almost in line with the benchmark, 23.3%. Still below average relative to the peer group, but improving. The one thing I will point out on the one-year number that we like is they're in line with the benchmark, but their beta is only 0.82, which is down there in the kind of the bottom right. And beta is a measurement of the volatility. So what the statement from that would be, on a one-year basis, their risk-adjusted return is actually pretty good. They took a lot less risk to basically match the market. But they've got some ground. They dug a hole. I just think that the best advice I can give you right now is that this would probably be the exact wrong time to fire this manager. You haven't had it for a full cycle. You haven't seen what they do in the downside in terms of downside protection. And I would give them at least that much to see if they don't make it up for you when the market turns the other way. They have historically, they've got a long-term track record that shows that they protect really well in down markets. If they don't, they don't have anything left to hang on to. It's a small portion of your portfolio overall, about 3.5%, I believe. That's on page 7, 3.36, so a little under 3.5% of your portfolio. It had made you 16.6% per year the last 3 years, but obviously the benchmark was up closer to 20. So not really a down market to get a good measurement on them, but they do seem to be improving. When I was up there last week, their numbers quarter to date were ahead of the benchmark. So again, I don't want to get to have a higher manager at the top firing with the bottom. I didn't get any alarms going off, personnel changes or anything like that that changed that put a bigger alert on the company. So I would hold your nose and hang on to them a little bit, see how they're doing down market. Advent, doing well on page 20. Any questions on Perimeter though before I scoot ahead? Okay. Advent on page 20. Good quarter ahead of the benchmark. They're a little bit below the benchmark for the 2 years. They're ahead for the 1 year, but they rank above average for against the peer group for the last couple of years. They're doing exactly what we want this asset class to do. It's going to give you some. Not going to keep up with stocks in a bull market, but it's going to protect you a whole lot of stuff. So, chicken way play stock market, if you remember. Euro Pacific stumbled a little bit again. The Euro part, Euro Pacific, 5-year numbers though still well above average and well ahead of the benchmark. We've spent quite a bit of time talking to this management team. We're comfortable that they're in there picking off some good names right now with low valuations. A lot of names in that Europe market, I've told you before, are getting knocked down, selling at price-earnings ratios of 7, 8, 9 times earnings just because they're located in Europe. They might have 90% of their bid revenue coming from outside the Eurozone, but because Europe's getting beat up, they're getting beat up. They're in there hopefully picking off some good names. It's a 52 basis point international fund with one of the best long-term track records you can find. I just don't think it's any time to pull the plug on them. We are underweighted to international relative to the target, and that has helped in your performance.
Just the Pacific part? Throughout the Euro part?
Well, if they're doing what they say they're doing and it's successful, we'll see that Euro Park start to pay off.
Actually, quite handsomely, I would hope. If we just see valuations go back to normal, anywhere near normal, they should have some pretty good returns going forward. But we are watching it close. But that's, again, I still think it's one of the best teams they've seen through these wild markets, probably better than most. So. Sawgrass is on page 24. The bond. No surprises, pretty much doing. Did you have, were you still on Euro Pacific for that?
No.
Their bonds are just sort of doing what we expect them to do, no surprises. As you notice, bonds, to the extent that, if you think about this, probably as recently as 2.5 years ago, we were probably at 40% close to in bonds. We took that bond down with the anticipation that rates were probably going to go up sooner rather than later. They didn't go up as soon as we thought, but to the extent that you're now over 10% underweighted to bonds than where you were maybe 2.5-3 years ago, and bonds did 0.34 for this period, convertibles did 18. So every dollar that moved over made 18% more than it would have had it stayed in bonds that went to convertibles. That's been a good asset allocation decision. Their bond numbers have been average, but actually a little above average for the 5 years, but averaged a little below the others. But again, I caution you sometimes in these universe comparisons, and I'm not making excuses for the managers. You've known David Perfine for a long time. He does a good job for you. This fixed income universe we compare to doesn't have anywhere near the quality restrictions that you all do. So when the lower quality stuff is, there really isn't in a universe that just does what you do. They tend to struggle a little bit with jump
and goals. Also the difference between 51% and 50% is like 100-something.
Yeah, in the bond world especially. Yeah, it's a tight range. So they're doing a good job for you. They're pretty steady, pretty predictable. And we've given Sawgrass and David Turfine the ability to protect their assets more and by going shorter if rates do go up. So that's their call. So all in all, you can see the numbers pretty good. Plant's done well, holding up well. Returns now in 3 years are over 12% a year. 2008's dropping off. 5-year averages are probably going to shoot up next. This plan is doing well. And again, it's about risk management kind of going forward. We got lower bond exposure, so that's why we've introduced convertibles. That's why I've introduced MLTs to get it's all about trying to smooth the ride going forward. Any questions?
Yep. Okay, on our real estate investments, if I remember correctly, we selected two fund managers. One is called money and one is not called money. Is that correct?
Yeah. We had
the Credit Suisse Bank or
UBS.
UBS.
Yeah, UBS, the Q. I expect them probably to call us within, probably towards the end of the year.
They said it was going to be a year anyway.
Yeah, at least a year with them, at least 12 to 18 months.
Next meeting.
And American Realty will. Yeah, well, they give us an update. I'll double check. But I just saw them not too long ago, and that nothing had really changed. So that's probably going to be another 6 months.
The remote.
Okay. Next question. Let's go back to page 10.
Tim?
When the actuary looks at our numbers and gives a number to the city of Ocala to pay for, to contribute to the pension plan, will this 2008 number be gone? And
does anybody recall if we have 4 or 5 years smooth?
Five.
Okay. This is the year that number drops off. So your 5-year average will go up by.
So it's about, let's just say, so as of October 1st, this 2008 number is no longer in the average
of next year.
Correct. Right now, if I did, and I'm doing this really off the top of my head, so drop that off, add those up, add the 12% as right now for fiscal year. If we stopped it right now and did a 5-year average, we'd be right at about 8% a year.
Yeah,
if we were able to close out with it. Now, the actuary takes off some expenses out of that, so it might be a little bit below that,
but the five-year smoothing would be about pretty close to.
The valuation report that we got at the last meeting was the one that's going to be used October 1.
Right. Yes, we got a year lag.
Yeah, there's that year lag in there. So the 37 point or whatever it was.
So not this going off will not benefit the city until October 1st, 2014?
Well, okay, and
that's what I'm trying to get out of here.
This is the way you got to explain to me, okay? The city's pension contributions went this way as the market went this way.
Yes.
Now the market's going that way. The problem is with the unfunded
liability.
It takes a while for the cities to catch up and start going down.
It's the same way though. What often doesn't get argued in these meetings or pointed out in these meetings is smoothing does two things. It takes you longer to get out of the hole, but it also takes you a lot longer to fall in the hole.
Yes.
And so in those years where the market was just screaming, you know, there's a lag effect on getting the benefit of that. And then when it went down, we had the two bear markets in 2000, in the decade of 2000, 2010. We're still climbing out of that hole that took us so long to fall into, but it is coming out of the hole pretty quick.
And you go back to the days of probably when you first got on the board, 15, 16, whatever it was, years ago now, when it was 4%, 3% city funding levels, and the plans were making so much money that they basically weren't having to fund anything.
Well,
it goes all the way back to then to where the problem started, because instead of leaving, they took it back. And there was never any, that excess that Mr. Corley built up with the 2 years that he funded everybody at the same rate, whether they needed it or not, which general was higher than us, that's what saved the first year that it shot up into the 20s, that's what saved the city that year. And now they're down to, what, 300,000 for something in excess?
Correct, that it won't affect the city's budget until next fiscal year.
Yes.
After 2014.
After 14.
Okay, I got my question answered.
300,000.
Yeah.
All right.
Because we're already set for the actuary report that you did set us for the 13, 14 years. So this will, the next actuary report you get will set us for 14.
Okay.
All right.
Now, there are several things that it brought up, and I'm sorry, let the third part of you. Okay, but these are questions for you that I have, things that were talked about up in Tallahassee at the meetings. And one of the big things was fee. And I think you kind of answered part of my question that I'm about to ask, index versus managed. Just take straight index, like an index fund. It's 100%, 100%. You're going to capture it. There's no upside, downside. That's going to be the biggest thing, right? You make a little bit less.
Right. I'm not a fan of passive products because, and that's what index funds are, passive products, because even though they're cheaper, and even though you will hear the argument, well, you know, the index beats 70% of the managers out there, that assumes that you're not doing any homework on your managers, that you don't have anybody doing any professional homework. That's a dartboard approach. If I sit here and threw dartboards at managers, then maybe the index is going to beat 70% of them. But I've brought you managers over the years. We've had some losers, but we've also had mostly winners in terms of relative to the benchmark. It's getting harder to show that right now in a straight bull market where the index keeps up guaranteed 100%. But I can show you the history of this plan where it's always done, you know, well, relatively speaking anyway, done well on down market. So you'll pay, your plan expense wise is probably Advent's at 80 basis points, I believe, or 80, I believe. You just hired managers at 75. Your large cap managers are below 60, I think. Small caps probably, I'd say your manager expenses are probably average 70, maybe, not even that probably. So you have a low, your Pacific's 52. Sawgrass fixed income, I believe they're doing 25.
Yeah.
So that's 50% of your assets right there that are below, 50 and 25, so in between that, you know, 30-35%.
And let's just say, managers who are underperforming. One of your contemporaries was up there in his presentation. He said, hit them. Tell them you want a rebate on the fee. If they're not performing.
Well, you've got a contract. I don't think you're entitled to a rebate on the
fee. Well,
whether we can request and request that they lower their fee if they're underperforming, if they don't keep the business. We can do that. I don't have a problem doing that. The only manager I'd probably put into that category right now would probably be Perimeter, and we can ask. They may not be, a lot of times these firms are not willing to do that. It's not because they don't want to keep your relationship, but if they've got most favored nations clauses in their contracts, that if they do it for you, they got to go do it for everybody. If they go lower that rate for everybody, they got to start laying people off or something. So I don't know, that's their decision. We can throw it out to them.
I'm just throwing things out here. Yep. Because I'm looking for a way. I mean, the state, you know,
you don't have an expense problem in this plan.
Well, we're fixed to, unfortunately, because the state gives it and the state takes it away.
Well, I mean, from an expense ratio standpoint, your total expenses from your
but I'm trying to keep it manageable. And yeah, you heard what Doug said last meeting, that this, the, well, I don't know, what was it, House Bill?
Senate Bill 534.
Yeah.
A little bit about that, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we were looking at
4 or 5 valuations a year.
Yes.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Tripling what we're paying.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, yeah. Yeah, having to run numbers 0%.
And that's what I mean, you know, and again, it's statistics. Anybody can find a number that's going to fit what they want
to
say.
They're going to give you 5 chances to give them one.
Yeah. But the problem being, I'm just trying to find ways to keep the expenses down, or looking at ways to keep the expenses down to try and balance out some of what, you know, another unfunded mandate.
Why don't you let me do that? I don't think that's a bad idea under the circumstances. I can ask them whether that means you can decide what you want to do depending on their answer, but we can ask them, just say based on circumstances and the pressures put on the fund and your performance, would you be willing to lower your fee? We would ask you to lower your fee.
Well, we had no idea what was going to come out of when we said, whatever finally happens when the city sits down and we renegotiate a new collective bargaining agreement, this pension part of it. And I know the city's probably already got the information of what they want to do, you know, relative to what they just finalized for general.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. I really think Perimeter's probably the only one. I don't think Westwood really falls in that category right now. And they just, Westwood just gave you, in their mind, and obviously it was the same price that Miller Howard was quoting, but they are charging 110 basis points for that commingled fund, unless there's another relationship already there. So they gave you a fee break there because of the current relationship. Euro Pacific is non-negotiable. That's a mutual fund, and that's already at the very low end of the range of 52 basis points. I can be honest with you about our fee. I wouldn't lower. I'm working harder for you, not less. and ours is pretty, I've always tried to keep it extremely reasonable with you guys. And history's there. But the large cap managers, again, Westwood, I don't think you'd get Sawgrass negotiated with you not too long ago to do the 25 basis points on the fix. Did they not? They separated it and don't charge 25 on the fix. So we talked to them about that. And I forget, they're only charging about 50 or 55 on the large cap.
Yeah, no, I understand they got to make money.
No, you're asking some good questions that probably should be raised. I just, I know, that, you know, again, what's in line with it? What's Perimeter's fee? Is it 1.1?
1 or 1.20?
Yeah, right off the top of my head, I just don't remember. But if we can, I think that's not an unreasonable request right there, actually. That'd be about the only spot I really would see anything.
It's just a thought I figured I'd throw out there from the notes that I took in May at the pension workshop. Then, you know, of course, there's the numbers that we discussed before with up funding. And that, with the investment gains over the last couple of years, that, you know, if Mr. Leahy had ever, or a city, or anybody had ever acted on it, going to save some significant money to the city anyway. Anyway, that's all I have as far as investment stuff.
Most of them, that's pretty reasonable given your patience and their expense ratio. Well, and their expense ratio is a little high, and they haven't delivered yet.
Jerry McGuire's client said, show me the money.
And don't walk the crowd. I'm always worried we walk out of these meetings sometimes, though. You're like that one manager out of six performing bad, and everybody walks out the moon.
You're fun doing well.
And we get them all. We've got a pretty good batting average, but yeah, I agree with you. That doesn't really help us.
You've really helped us diversify. You've done your job.
Tried to. We'll see. But all we can do is make good decisions with what we got in front of us. I don't know what the future holds. I like the way the plan is structured right now.
Moving on.
For
attorney's report.
Attorney's report.
Okay, total revenue code we discussed. We required to amend the plan for qualification and compliance purposes. I did prepare those ordinances, sent them to the city, and they're going to be set for first reading. It's unlike other ordinances we do, and I know you have a copy, but there's nothing for the board to have input on this because it's tax qualification language from the IRS, so that's all set, and I understand. Go to first reading soon, so that's taken care of. 534. Fortunately, as we all know, Governor signed it into law. As Mike alluded to earlier, this is the bill that imposes additional filing and disclosure requirements on every defined benefit plan in the state. It will result in additional administrative expenses, primarily for actuarial fees, for additional calculations that need to be done. We should be receiving soon correspondence from Foster telling us what additional work they need to do as a result of this bill and also the new Gatsby requirements. Brad Heinrichs mentioned the other day they haven't decided on the fee structure yet for the extra work, but he said that he thought it would be somewhere around 30% of the valuation fee, prior valuation fee, which is significant. But we'll see, but we will be hearing from him. On 534, there's still some talk that it may be challenged judicially on constitutional grounds. We're watching to see. I'd like to see that. Constitutional provision in Article 7, Section 18 is that if a bill passes, that could have an adverse impact on the ability of the city to raise funds, which certainly this one could. That has to pass by a two-thirds majority, and this bill does not.
So the city would have to challenge it, not a board?
The city would be the one to have standing, or possibly one of the employees. So we're watching it, and we'll see. Kind of hope that the governor wouldn't sign it for this reason. You know, kind of thought he might veto it. But
yeah, because it doesn't affect them. It exempted everything FRS.
Oh, yeah. That's part of that. And, you know, people ask me, I haven't heard it discussing this over the last 6 months. Most cities are not different. And, of course, employees are not, and members, and pension boards. So, yes, well, then, you know, why did it pass? How did it pass? Well, it did because the proponents of the bill are trying to get this information to argue against the defined benefit plans over the next several years. And the information is really be fallacious for that purpose anyway. I haven't heard one actuary say anything other than that this doesn't add any value to the plan or administration whatsoever. So I'll keep you posted on that. Similarly, with respect to the Naples, what is widely known as the Naples decision, it's the August 14th, 12 letter from Keith Brinkman to Naples. I was told last week that one or more of the fire unions is going to challenge that in court. And that, you know, you may recall in that letter, it said nothing, it changed the position that they've had since the 1991 legislation with respect to use of state money and how low you can reduce benefits if you're going to reduce benefits. But this letter simply said their prior position was inaccurate. And that was it. I was told last week that they are, the suit will be filed. So we'll see. If it is, we'll watch that as well.
Well, I think you had left. Mr. Heinrichs got in a very heated debate with the state guys over that in the forum, in front of everybody. He came to the front row and sat in front of me where I was sitting, and then they got into it. And I mean, to the point where it was like, sir, you just need to quit asking questions. Things like, no, sir, I'm not going to quit asking questions.
Who was he asking the questions of?
The two actuaries.
Doug Breckel.
Yeah.
Breck was asking the question.
He was hot. I mean, he was turning red. You can watch the color coming up his neck because they wouldn't answer any questions. It was like what we went through a couple years ago with the 8.5 to 8 because I said so thing.
Do you remember that?
That's exactly the answer they gave him, and he wasn't having any of that. He was furious.
There were two of them up there?
Yep.
Yeah.
It was the dynamic duo. They called them the dynamic duo from DNS.
It was Beckendorf and Joe, the head actuary there now, replaced Charles Slavin.
One kind of large guy and one kind of older, skinnier guy.
Yeah.
Well, the dynamic duo was not giving an answer and was, I mean, completely tap dancing around the issue. And Brad was, I mean, and he was basically saying, you guys supporting this and this going on is hurting everybody.
Is it Joe Edmonds, the other guy up there?
I think that's who it was.
Well,
I can tell you right now, they did not want to hear when they saw. He just kind of shook his head as soon as Brad started talking, and he knew it was coming, and he did not like it.
Beckendorf, someone we had
that call is
he's gone now.
So many
people.
Because remember, the president said 3 years and 5 years, and they said, well, you realize the pressure's coming up here. One of the reasons I talk about that 5-year number drop, the pressure's coming up now because that's not going to be an excuse anymore.
Right.
That's what they used 2 years ago. So the 3-5-year numbers were nowhere near 8.5%. And if you remember, where I really got him mad was when I finally said, well, first of all, it seemed odd that they were talking, what actuary talking 3 and 5 years. They usually talk 30 and 50.
Right.
Second, I said, Doug, the 3 and 5 year returns are nowhere near 8% either. Why are you okay with 8%? You know, and that's when he got mad, I remember. And I backed off because he was like,
like you said.
Well, 8% seems to be 7.75 to 8% seems to be the standard.
8.5 now. I'm getting people calling on
it. It probably out of that whole list, I would say, 80 to 85% of the plans are either 7.75 or 8%.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
Because like I said, the 5-year average with you guys, if we quit today, rolled off 08, if we didn't earn another dime between now and the year end, it would be right around 8. Your 3-year number is already over 12.
Yeah.
So that argument goes away. I don't know. And then having to run all these tests, assuming we're going to have 0% return, one of them, they're like, no worries.
It went 2% less than what we're using.
Less than what we're using. And then, I mean, I know, you know, if we go through another day, if you have to make assumptions based on the decade of 2000s, you have one decade of 2 bear markets and 0% S&P 500 returns. If that's the case, you need to lower your assumption rate to about 1.5%. Do you think that's the future?
Didn't you already have to prepare 2 of them this year, 1
to 0? Yep, because I had to do the
accurate.
Yep, because that's the number they thought was a good number.
For the 7.75 thing.
That's how much it's going
to cost. You don't have to do the 775 any longer. That requirement was...
That they actually removed, because 775 is what FRS is.
Yeah.
Where FRS was not subject
to... But now they want us to... So whatever it costs us to do the 775 is going to cost us...
Which is, I think, important. That may be worse.
This is basically, it's basically five full valuations that he's going to have to do.
Right. And FRS...
The only good thing is he gets all the starting numbers, so it's just plug-ins. But it's still going to be a lot more work for him.
Where are we at unfunded state campaign?
Absolutely.
It's of no value whatsoever.
Especially considering state doesn't need it.
So, well, after the meeting, I'll mention something that's not relevant to this. It's kind of an inside baseball thing, but I'm going to say it's not relevant to this, so after the meeting, I'll mention it. All right, that's it. And then the only thing is, I know we're past July 1st, but we're not to September 1st yet, which is the date the fines start for not filing financial disclosures.
They sent them out.
So I just wanted, they all got them filed?
They sent them out late. Yes, but yes, mine filed.
Because you know, I've been talking about this last couple.
Yeah, I got mine and got it stamped.
Frank?
Yeah.
Did you get filed?
Excuse me?
Your financial disclosure?
I don't have a copy of it here.
Did you get it filed with the clerk or with the
supervisor
of elections?
No, I just got the minutes from the last meeting and it's kind of ones from Burgess Chambers.
Yeah, you mentioned we brought up at the last meeting about our financial disclosure forms that had to be filed.
And yes.
You said then you thought you already had the form. Did you find out whether you did or not?
I did not.
We got a list though. Ray's name was not on it.
I'll check on Regina.
We'll check on that, Ray, and we'll find out if you filed, and if not, we'll get the proper forms.
Wait, Mike, I did file my financial disclosure.
Oh, okay.
I asked for a copy of it. The copy of it was sent to my house.
Okay. And we got a delinquent list from the supervisor of elections or from the state or somebody, and Ray's name was not on the list. Most of the city council was on it, but not Ray.
They were?
No, I filed those forms as soon as they came in the mail.
Okay.
I sent them back to the Secretary of State like I was supposed to.
Okay.
And then when you guys asked about it, then I checked into it and I called the Secretary of State's office. I said, yes, we have your form here. And I said, would you send me a copy of it, please? So I have a copy of it at home.
Okay.
Good. Just want to make sure.
That's it.
Okay. Thank you.
I wanted to, were you done with this report? Mm-hmm. I think we were talking about one thing probably a couple months ago about our differences in the numbers, because this article that came out in the Star Banner the other day about these numbers that were the difference in the numbers, because I guess this FSU study says that our funded ratio is 66%.
Yeah, that was 3 years ago.
But our actuary says our funded ratio is 74.9%.
The number that keeps getting thrown out and used in the FSU is a 2010 number from a 2010 study that used 2008 material done by one professor at Florida State that assigned this mythical grade based on her formula that she came up with for funded and expenses.
So city council is aware of that, and it's old data.
Some of them at least are, but I don't know.
Is there a way that we can make city council aware that it's old data?
I've personally talked to some of them.
This is, of course, the Star Banner, you know, they're saying this is from a report that was as of September 30th. So that's, I don't want
September
city council.
Wet year.
They don't say.
And that's the problem. That information came from next door.
This is saying, the article says, no, this is talking about the general employees fund.
Yeah.
The saying was funded as 46 as of September 30th, so that kind of leaves the perception.
That last year. That's their valuation from last year.
I'm just saying that separate pension plans for police fund at 66% and firefighters 70% are in slightly better shape. Police have perception that they were all funded that way as of September of last year, so it's just, that's just.
So you would like the council aware, if you guys could do that, or do you want?
Well, if somebody.
That report, I don't know who told the star banner about that report, so.
So I don't want the council thinking that our, that we're funded at 66%, if that's not true.
There's only one person quoted in the entire article.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that that information came from that one. I mean, I'm not defending who gave it to them. I don't know what this is.
Yeah, there's only one person quoted in the article, so that's the only place I can assume that the quote came from.
Well, don't assume always. I don't know.
Well, I don't know, it was written by Christopher Curry, the star banner, so I don't know where he got his.
Because that report is kind of like old news, so it was kind of surprising that they brought out that report again. That's how it was.
When I read that, I was kind of shocked because we just got our actual report that we're funded at 74.9%. If they're working off old data, I just would hope council would be aware that we're not funded at 66%.
Yeah, you'd be a good idea to notify the council about that. I think there are us to be the one. I don't want to take that.
Is there somewhere we, is there already aware of that deal? Is that somewhere we can notify them or send them a recent extra report?
I don't know if they're aware of it.
I personally met with a councilman, sat down and spoke to the man for an hour and 55 minutes, laid out a bunch of stuff for him, and got, well, we gotta do something.
Can we send them all a copy of our actual report? Is that a possibility?
They have that. They have it.
Okay.
I think most people would probably take it with a grain of salt knowing it's 2010, but it's a good point to make. I don't know.
I don't believe everything I read in the Star Banner, but I just think that's, if that's old data and they're still publishing this fact, it just bothers me. People,
citizens. You write a letter to the editor as well.
Well, I'm on the board, so I don't want to see it's a conflict that I'm doing like that, but I just think it's terrible that people would read the newspaper and think that our pension plans are in that bad shape, but it's really not. I'm just.
That's, well, the problem. People have been led to believe we're in terrible shape, and we are not.
As they're working off, so there are a whole different set of numbers coming from the. You remember about 2 years ago, I subbed for Matt to hire the what's the name of the company?
Gabriel Rose.
Gabriel Rose. Yes. To come in and be a contractor for the city to do their independent audit and everything, they're using different numbers too. I mean, that's one actuary that's using one set of numbers versus our actuary who uses whatever set of numbers, and you know, and you can manipulate it into what you, it's statistics. You can manipulate it into whatever you want it to say.
Figures don't lie, but liars figure. Yeah, you can say that, but it's like, but is there a way for us to rebut that from the Star Banner? Does it do any good? I mean, is there who would rebut that from the Star Banner? For us? I mean,
oh, nobody's going to rebut it from the Star Banner. I mean, the only way to do it would be a letter to the editor or a special op-ed piece.
I just hate for, you know, a citizen, you know, a citizen tries to stay well-informed to read that article and think that our plan's in that bad shape.
Does the Star Banner have a corrections column in it?
Yes, it does.
Frequently, yes.
Yeah. So some people saw that years ago, and I mean, that's a deal.
I guess you could talk to Jimmy. Does Jimmy ever talk to the newspapers? Yeah. I don't know.
Of course, they put these stories probably all the times on the top of the fold and the corrections are buried back.
Oh, yeah, buried on the inside.
Well, I mean, since the report came out in 2010 or whatever, you know, the first thing they did was somebody gave it to the Star Banner, and Star Banner came over here asking questions. At that time, current council members, one of whom I'm very familiar with now, felt the need as soon as Sue Carr looked at it and said, well, what do you think about this report? Had to give their opinions. One council member blamed the entire situation on drop. One council member said that the entire situation was police officers being greedy. I mean, it's just, that's what I'm saying. There's no real informed.
And one council person says, I don't think police officers should get that benefit because on my job, I don't get that.
Yeah.
And that was his basic rationale.
I'm just upset reading that article.
I don't get it, and they shouldn't get it.
But since that day, that's what I'm saying. That's not the first one that's had that. It's been, we've always been funded at 66% every time. We've always been a D. You know, and nobody can see anything past that.
More money. It says, reading that article, the way it's written, it says, as of September 30th, we're only funded 66% the way that article's written. And it's just not true.
Yes.
Well, the one thing he did say, he said something about things go up and down or something like that. That was
well, it goes on to say that our plan's well managed, but.
You know, I'll make this offer. I've done it before in some other cities, and that is if you ever want us to come up and, you know, meet the council, we'll be glad to make any kind of presentation we can make. Usually it's much more effective if the actuary's there also.
Yeah, Doug has made the same offer.
And we've done it several places. But glad to do it.
We're waiting. Yeah. I mean, they're still at impasse with fire over 1 year. They haven't gotten the fire's new one, which was supposed to coincide with our new one. That's supposed to start October 1 of this year. And we haven't even sat down at the table yet and started negotiating anything other than one of our guys was called in because the city wanted to drop one of the insurance plans, and they had to have a meeting about that when they dropped the middle insurance plan, and we had to go ahead, and the union had to go ahead and sign off on the fact that that middle insurance policy could be dropped because it was a current benefit.
Right.
But as far as negotiation of the new contract that's supposed to go into effect October 1 and be 3 years, nothing.
Is it proper for me to contact that reporter and tell that information's wrong? And I think he's good as well to attend one of our board meetings if he wants to get correct information.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll be more than happy to do that.
Or we could get Larry or Doug. They'd be glad, I'm sure, to talk to them and give them some information.
No, don't get me talking to reporters. It never goes well. You know, I'll come meet with your council 10 times before I talk to a reporter. I don't talk to them anymore. I'll just tell them, forget it. They never quote you right. They never get it right.
Larry's right. Never talk to reporters.
They never get it right. I don't care what you say to them. They've already got their article written.
You're right. I know I've been a victim of that. Not here, but when I was up in Connecticut.
I've been a victim of that a couple of times.
That's my feeling. I think Alicia's got something she wants to present to us.
The administrative agreement?
Didn't we just do this?
No, last year.
Didn't we just do this?
No. But a year. It's effective October 1. Yeah,
it's
write me a 3-year contract.
How long?
We can.
Did I give out my copy again? No, I gave out my copy last. I couldn't give out the numbers. I gave you the red line copy just so that you could see that they were just title changes. Since Hope is no longer helping me, Sadie is. They used her title, so she's working half the payroll, half the pension. And I changed the font size on the description, the job descriptions. Let's see. The wages, the overall wages for both went down about $1,500, and the pension went up about $8,200. But as in for this, you know, my pay, and say half of Sadie's is split between the three different boards. It was a net difference of a net increase of $1,778 for this board. Now, with that being said, I presented the same thing to the general board, and this is what happened.
Okay. They thought that at sometimes we need to review Alicia's salary as well. We can do that as a part of the organizations and things that we do within the city. And so the general employees pension wanted me to see if her pay grade is accurate and see if we should give her someplace between a 2% and 6% increase for her services, because there was a savings. And so of course the percentage, whatever we increase we give her, would come back to your contract as well. So the general employees board approved the agreement with giving me the authority to negotiate a 2% to 6% increase on her salary, if I can do that within the confines of the city rules. So if you all wanted to do the same, we will pursue that. I will review her job description, and then I'll go out in the market and then show that she's being compensated according to the market. And I guess since she's gotten the last interview, she's got certification, so if that's why the 2% came into play, because evidently in the past, if you've gotten additional certification, you've been eligible for 2% still.
Her salary is included here in the overall salary, isn't it? Both of them were combined.
The last page.
I don't have that red line copy.
Okay.
The red line's only on the Word document, not the... But there has been no change in my column except for whatever.
Okay, I'm looking at attachment C, and our total fee is $25,500.
Yes.
And how much was it last year?
Less $1,778.
Okay.
And so that was an increase of the $1,778.
All right.
And our pension.
We're paying her pension.
Yeah.
We're giving it to Army General.
You saved a little bit with higher, with us so paying 80, but pension ate it up and then some. Right.
I move we approve this agreement for the next fiscal year.
With the caveat, you can get a raise or without.
I'm only going to pay 13% of the raise. It's not going to be much.
That's why I'm asking. I mean, I guess it makes a difference to the motion.
To the motion. Okay, so I move we approve the agreement with the caveat that that the police board pays its share of any raise that Alicia may receive.
Thanks.
Second. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Anything else? Anything else?
No. There is an FPTA class. This board has usually two members of it.
It's expensive.
September 29th through October 2nd.
It's expensive.
Incredibly good speakers, though.
Yes. Hello. And the certification is...
We can vouch for a couple of them.
Yeah, we can vouch for a couple of them.
Over to you.
And Lee.
Well, he speaks at everything. He's a lawyer.
That's true.
He speaks at all.
Doing that thing since 90, I think, or 91.
I also heard that there is going to be a Tallahassee class in October. Now, I haven't confirmed the dates yet.
So they said they were, I remember them saying they were going to try and do it, but I haven't heard anything. I haven't got anything from Mike McInnes?
Yes.
Or whatever his name is?
I want to say it was around the 26th to the 28th. of October. When I do get a firm date, I'll email everyone.
But for, correct me if I'm wrong, that is the same class, only instead of talking about the legislation that was pending, it will be with the legislation that passed.
Yes, it will be actually what has passed.
It'll be the class they used to have down south, which is kind of in Tallahassee twice.
Yes, they can do it a lot cheaper up there. They got the FSU, the Turnbull Center, does it for next to nothing. Versus
what they used to do in the fall, they pretty much moved back and forth between Orlando area and Tampa area.
Yeah.
And then two or three years ago, for budgetary reasons, that's why they cut that one out. And now
they're bringing it back, but they're not going to move it around.
Is that right?
Yeah. They're going to keep it in Tallahassee because it's cheaper for them. And the reason they were having it in Orlando and Miami was because of South Florida folks. And they finally, I guess, they just decided to make them drive. It's only an extra 4 hours.
I want to say I seen something that said that it was the 26th and 20th, but I've got the 27th and 30th fits the time frame. But I'll confirm that and email everyone.
We wouldn't be able to go though. We'd need board approval. If that wouldn't work. We don't have a meeting before then.
Our next meeting is the 3rd of November. Second week of November.
We could approve that today.
Is there a fee for that? Or would it just be
$295?
For logic.
I think it was $295.
$295, and then a higher and something if you're going to day one.
$119 for the room.
Because the fall one used to be no charge.
Right. Yeah, but it was $295 for all 3 days, $250 for just the 2 days, and then like $100 and something for the new trustee day. Because you went all 3 days, right?
No.
You didn't do the trustee one?
No, I did one in Tuesday.
Tuesday, Wednesday. I have no problem with sending somebody because you got the continuing education.
Yeah. The thing is, if I got reappointed, I might like to go to that fall one. Kind of works out better for my schedule because I haven't been to one in probably 4 or 5 years.
You speak of this one? Schedule 2, but got a conflict, and we're negotiating with the BCA as to who's going to take it.
I can't think about
it. Right? There was a discussion. I'm just looking at my calendar, and I didn't know what I was doing, or anything, but I see it when I hear that.
So yeah. Basically, do we have to send somebody? Yeah. We can do an open motion saying
that
we would approve to send a person.
One or two people, if they can put it into their schedule for us, we find out the date.
Somebody's gonna make it.
I can't make a motion.
I can't make motions here today.
Can I make it if I'm the one that wants to go?
Yeah.
Oh. I moved it weird. It's kind of self-serve, but I make a motion that we approve one or two people to attend a proposed
meeting with me.
I'm asking for the training session to be held in. Second.
Discussion. Ray, did you hear that?
Ray, did you hear that motion?
I need to talk to Chris.
That's our next meeting.
I heard him. Tallahassee Conference.
Friday. Yeah, November
8th. Hey, Ray, are you still with us?
The conference has been firmed up yet.
Yep, there it is.
The coalition of the division.
What is it?
The holiday. They changed it on Friday.
We'd like to do that one by 20 bucks again myself.
There's a chance I might be a little late for that one. I got a 9:30 at
Lake Mary.
If I get out there by noon.
I heard him say something about his IP.
I just haven't had a chance to get on the list.
All right, so we have to vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes.
I have two things. Our annual report, we received notice from Tallahassee that the annual report was approved, so we should be looking for state money to be received here
fall conference.
Hopefully this month or early next month. We've got to get it by the end of September.
That was a good old thing.
But everything has been approved. And the other...
Do you have to work on this farm year?
Nope. The other thing is we have a pending disability application from James Charles. And he injured a knee on the job, and the police office is working on that.
Is that it?
That's all I have. Ray, anything you want to add?
All right, let's...
That's a good idea.
Yeah, he's got his...
Hey, Ray. Ray.
Okay.
All right. Well, if there's nothing else, I'll close the meeting. The time is now 4:05 p.m.
Thank you, Ray.
Good seeing everybody.
We're all doing well.